Good evening, everybody. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, May 2nd, 2016. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern to midnight. If you're listening live over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-562-3140. Participant code is 385698. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support National Liberty Alliance effort to save America. Also, please support National Liberty Alliance by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right for more information. Okay. Tonight's scripture reading, hang on a second. I'm going to have to mute. I hear some noise, and you can re-hit *6 to unmute yourself, Brent. Anyway, tonight's scripture reading is Jeremiah chapter 9, verses 23 through 26, and chapter 10, verses 10 through 16. So Jeremiah chapter 9, 23. Thus saith Jehovah, let not the wise man glory in his wisdom, neither let the mighty man glory in his might. Let not the rich man glory in his riches. But let him that glorieth glory in this, that he understandeth and knoweth me, that I am Jehovah, which exercise loving kindness, judgment, and righteousness in the earth. For in these things I delight, saith Jehovah. Behold, the days cometh, saith the Lord, that I will punish all them which are circumcised with the uncircumcised, Egypt, Judah, and Edom, and the children of Ammon and Moab, and all that are in the utmost corners that dwell in the wilderness. For all these nations are uncircumcised, and all the house of Israel are uncircumcised in the heart. And we're going to pick up now in Jeremiah 10, verse 10. But Jehovah is the true God. He is the living God and an everlasting King. At his wrath the earth shall tremble, and the nations shall not be able to abide his indignation. Thus shall ye say unto them, the gods that have not made the heavens and the earth, even they shall perish from the earth and from under these heavens. He hath made the earth by his power. He hath established the world by his wisdom, and hath stretched out the heavens by his discretion. When he uttereth his violence, there is the multitude of waters in the heavens, and he causeth the vapors to ascend from the ends of the earth. He maketh the lightning with the rain, and bringeth forth the wind out of his treasures. Every man is brutish in his knowledge. Every founder is confounded by the graven image, for his molten image is falsehood, and there is no breath in them. They are vanity and the works of errors. In the time of their visitation they shall perish. The portion of Jacob is not like them, for he is the former of all things, and Israel is the rod of his inheritance. Jehovah of hosts is his name. Okay, that was Jeremiah out of chapter 9 and chapter 10. Okay, let's see. Just a couple announcements. On Tuesday, tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we're going to have a call for all of those people that have papers, habeas corpuses, and or if they have papers that we're doing for them for mortgage foreclosures. We're going to be meeting to talk a little bit about that tomorrow at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We're not going to take a lot of time, but basically sort of an update where we're going, what we're doing. And we'll probably give some answers and talk a little bit about how we're proceeding with the mortgage foreclosures and some of the resistance that we're being met with and how we're going to deal with that resistance. So again, tomorrow at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here in this room. Anybody is invited, of course, to sit in and listen if they want. But we're not going to discuss any specific cases. We're going to talk very generic about the types of cases we're working on and what we're doing and where we're going. And maybe, you know, try to do a little better given on a projection on when we'll catch up. We are moving quite quickly. I believe we've got 25 out or something of that nature. And I think there was one or two more or a couple more, if I recall. I'll have to go check. That may have to go out. I'll get about tomorrow. The other thing is, of course, you know, it's always a money problem. It takes money to run these things and keep things going. So we are short this month, so anybody that can do something special, we'd appreciate it. A one-time gift, or if you can, anybody's not giving, giving $5 or more a month is all we're asking for. If everybody was to give $5 a month or more, goodness, we'd be rolling in dough, have plenty of money to do a lot of things. But we're limited. We're on a shoestring budget. We always have been, and I presume we always will be. But we're having a tough time right now. So, again, anybody that can give this month, especially those who haven't given, please, $5 a month or more or a one-time gift or something. Just hit click on the donation button up top right side and you can do something by credit card, or you can mail a check or a money order or something. All right, well, anyway, we appreciate that. Okay, I understand we do have some questions. Gary, how many questions do we have that came in by email? You have to unmute yourself, I presume.
Oh, yeah, I do. We actually do have a number of questions, but I'd like to start from the top down. We're actually getting questions also on Facebook on this as well, so this is a great time to be able to address these questions. There are several questions in a row, and I'm going to read them all, and then we'll go through them one at a time because I think they should be addressed. What is Karen Hudis doing besides writing letters? She claims NLA is working with her. Is this true? Who is financing her weekly show? Why is there nothing to report but the same story as the week before? Who is working behind the scenes to keep her going? How much can we believe about the gold? That's at the end of the questions for the, I mean, for this one question. But if you take a look out on Facebook, we see some of these same thread of questions. Did you hear me?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was muted. So, okay, yeah. Well, look, we're not compatible. She's doing something and we're doing something else. And hopefully she'll be successful in what she's doing if it's going to be any way to assist, getting back America ultimately is what our concern is. And if we can get back America, I believe a lot of nations can get the control back of themselves also. I truly believe that. I know she's working on trying to do something with collectively with other nation, getting gold and silver and working some kind of a money thing like that. And I don't know that that would be bad. I don't understand it enough on the international level at this point. And maybe that could be hijacked. I really just don't know. We do know that what we have to do is at some point in time we need to move back to gold and silver. The Constitution requires it. And when we, the people, take back control, get the controls back and get back into the court system and get our government back under justice and operating under the Constitution, then one of the things we need to be discussing with our states and pushing them to do is to obey the Constitution, and that is to make nothing but gold or silver. The money of exchange. So we'll do our best to do that. But as far as what she's doing, I really don't know. I don't have no clue on who's financing her. I have no idea what they're working on. And we are not working directly with her in any way, shape, or form. But we've had conversations with her. We want to be friendly with her. We want to support any way we can in our conversations as individuals. But again, we're not going to support her operations or anything of that nature in the open, because first of all, I personally don't understand all of what's going on, but we really have to focus in on what we have to do. And our job is to bring justice back into the courts. That is the key to solve all of America's woes, all of our problems. Just bring the king back into the court. That's all we need to do. Justice in the court. So that's all I could tell you about what she's doing. And then again, we are not working behind the scenes per se with her.
Okay. Okay. Well, and so that answers the question that has been floating around on Facebook as well in the email questions, that we are really not working with her.
Right. We don't want to say anything bad about her. We want to be friends with her and anyone else. We should be friends with everyone. And I do know that she was concerned about the governors, because she's trying to work something out with the governors, and she was concerned. She mistaken for what these other people are doing with these this quasi-shadow government thing, which is subversion against the United States. And the fact that the government has done nothing to them, considering the paper we filed, really speaks reams of what's going on in that group over there. But in any event, she was concerned, and we had long conversations, and we told her we're not going after governors. It is not in our plan to go after governors. But it is in our plan to give them mandamuses, and we have done so. It is in our plan to make sure that they obey the Constitution, and we have told them so. And so at some point in time, you know, their hands may be a little tied at this point, and they may not be able to make any moves. We understand that. And the olive branch will always be there. But when the time comes, if they don't do the right thing, then they should have to worry about us. But at that point, I don't think we're going to have a problem with governors at that point in time. And even I know there's a few of them that really are evil, in my opinion, that they're really on the wrong side. But when the time comes, you know, they're going to do the right thing, because they know better. So I do know that the governors are aware of us. I do know they're concerned about what we're doing. And again, they should be. But again, all we're asking is one thing: obey the law. That's all. Obey the law. And when justice returns into our court, when we get the king back into the court and the principles of law are reset, and we the people now get the consent of our government through the courts, then they may have something to be worried about if they're not doing the right thing. Just do the lawful thing. All right, that's it for all I have to say anyway.
Okay, that actually answers it as well as for me, because I had something that was underlying in there as well. So I'm happy with that. Another question comes, and I believe this has to do with possibly Terry Trussell. In the case in Florida, the judge called the defendant three times. Why didn't the judge request that the defendant approach the bench? Is there a line that separates the judge from we the people?
Right. Well, look, Terry played the fiction game, and he got burnt. And we tried to advise him not to do that. We tried to advise Roger, who headed that whole thing, not to have him do that. And Terry ended up in jail. I think he was in jail for 30 or 45 days. They did release him, but he's still going to court, I understand. I don't know where that case is standing. We've let him know last time we talked to him we would still take his case on and help him. But he's, you know, doing whatever he's doing. We cannot give fiction any credibility. If you acknowledge fiction by trying to figure a way to get around fiction and say the proper magic words and click your heels and think you're going to get taken out of the land of Oz, well, then I got a bridge in Brooklyn to sell you. These people are laughing at you. That's what they're doing. They got control. They know that they've got control. And as long as you give them reality, they got power. When you don't give them reality, we don't give them power by just – and don't acknowledge them. It's a fraud. There's nothing else to say. When we hit up to those walls of resistance, we call it for what it is. It's a fraud. They're in violation of obedience to the Constitution. They are at war with the Constitution and therefore at war with the people. And ultimately, at the end of the day, they are subverting the government of the United States of America. You know, there's nothing wrong with our government. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the structure of our government. There's nothing. We've got the three branches. All the procedures and processes of the court are in place. Everything is there. The problem is that we've been hijacked. It's like an airplane that's been hijacked. Someone is taking control of the controls. And it's not just one person. It's a conspiracy. And it's a criminal act. It's actually organized crime is what it is on a worldwide level. And so these people have taken control, and then they're steering the ship. We need to get in there and take it back. And the way we take it back is by bringing the king back into the court, bringing justice, the law, back into the court, and then applying and requiring obedience to that law. And guess what? Every problem America has is solved. It'll take a little time, but it'll go quite quickly. But again, that's our goal, and that's what we need to do.
All right. We have another sort of a question, but it's, if I could arrange for you to be on the a guest on the Alex Jones InfoWars radio TV program, would you be interested in introducing and explaining what NLA's missions, goals, strategies are for the year of 2016?
Of course, we would talk to anyone, and I'm sure Gerard and myself would both go on. And we'd answer any question they have. We'd lay out exactly what our plans is, what we're doing. You know, light operates in lights, and sometimes that hurts us because people know what our plan is. The enemy knows. But you know what? It's really hard for the enemy to really take down light. I mean, they do try, and they do succeed at different things. But the key here, again, is just standing on solid ground, standing on a higher ground, and just doing the right thing. It's not. It doesn't get any more difficult than that. So we would go on that show and we would lay out our plan for them. Hopefully people would join us.
Okay, I see another interesting question. You've often stated that the first people to live under common law was Israel. Was that a Republican form of government?
I don't think that was a Republican form of government per se. You know, a Republican form of government has a constitution, but you know, from the standpoint of a Republican form of government, it's a government by law. So that's true. And of course, Israel was different from the standpoint that they had direct contact to God through prophets, and God was their king. I mean, they had 400 years of great rule under God Himself. And he spoke to them through prophets from time to time. And he set up the process, and Moses went through this whole thing, setting up the process, working under God. And they created a system very similar to what we have. As a matter of fact, we copied a lot of what that structure was. To my knowledge, instead of a constitution, what they had ultimately was a covenant with God. And our constitution is to control our political leaders. And remember, you know, we are not a nation, a godly nation per se, where people are really focused. All of us are focused in on the true God, the creator of the heaven and the earth. So, you know, we are a mixed bag of people. And so in another way, we do need a constitution. But nevertheless, God rules us through the courts ultimately. That's how I see it. Because, you know, we are ruled by law. The constitution is law. It's applied by the courts. When people are disobedient to it and we can't fix the problem, then they're brought into a court of law. And the court of law forces them to do the right thing if they're breaking the law. And it's that simple. And that's how God can rule through our nation. He can rule through the court. We need to put the king back in the court and be ruled by principle again, be ruled by righteousness, justice. We need to be standing on the higher grounds.
Right. And not profit. All right. That is the end of the questions.
Okay. All right. I don't know if Gerard's back yet. I know he's running late. Gerard, are you here? Okay, what we may do is we'll move over to Brent. Brent, are you here? You'll have to hit *6 to unmute yourself.
Yes. Brent.
Okay. All right, I'm not sure whether you are you going to follow up on your conversation last week? I think you mentioned three parts. Or what are you going to be talking about tonight?
Well, we're going to follow up on discussing the militia, although the conversation went other directions, but that's okay. But
right,
I'll start with that.
However you feel, you can lead us in this. We'll listen in. All right, Brent Winters, again, is going to be speaking now for a while. He usually speaks for about 20 minutes, and he'll take two or three questions after that. And Brent Winters is the author of the book, Excellence in the Common Law, and he also has a website, commonlawyer.com, right? Commonlawyer.com.
Correct. And you can go to that website. Yeah.
Go right ahead, Brent.
And you can see there. You can see there where you can listen to me on the radio, and presently, 5 days a week, I'm going through Magna Carta, clause by clause and blow by blow. And if that's something that would interest people, Magna Carta wasn't put in place as a constitution. They didn't call it that, but that's what it is, because it constitutes their agreement of what is right and what is wrong, what is the law. And most of the principles, all the ones I have looked at closely there, are principles that we followed up on here in America, and our Constitution is an attempt, just as was Magna Carta, to reestablish something that had been lost many centuries before in their case, a few centuries before in our case, a number of centuries more. And both Magna Carta and our Constitution seek to hark back beyond the Norman conquest of the year 1066 and establish the common law first principles that obtained in England before that time. And I'm quoting Justice James Wilson of the Supreme Court when I say that. I didn't say it just like he said it, but that's pretty much what he said. And I found that to be true. And many other men, much more learned than myself, have said it all the same thing. Now, last time we began a discussion about the militia of the several states, and there have been others who have made a point of examining the structure of our Constitution and how the militia is woven throughout the fabric of it, and then also coupled that with the power of the purse, the power of the sword in the militia of the several states, and the power of the purse. Well, the power of the purse is of no consequence now, of no consequence the way things work now, because the government, and in collusion, people say that the Federal Reserve Bank is neither federal nor does it have any reserves, and it's certainly private. Well, I understand what people mean when they say that, but on the other hand, it's important to recognize that the Federal Reserve Bank runs the government. The Federal Reserve Bank dictates to the government what to do, when to do it, and how to do it, just as the Bank of London dictated to Parliament and the government of England during the days of our separation from Britain. The analogy is uncanny. It's the same thing and the same bunch, frankly. Different people, but the same bunch in point of view. And I don't want to forget that the thing that held our country together in the beginning was not the power of the purse, because the Bank of London and its trading arm, the British East India Company, controlled everything, including members of Parliament, many of them, most of them, a critical mass of them, including the King of England himself, were heavily invested in the British East India Company, a corporate body that at any given moment, 24 hours a day, had 2,400 ships on the high seas. That's massive. And they were competing against the Dutch East India Company, but they controlled everything under the doctrine, they called it in those days, of mercantilism, which said that countries shouldn't have free trade, they should just dominate the world with their trade. And that's what was going on then, and that's why we had our war of separation. But at the heart of that war of separation was not our ability to control any purse strings. We were flat busted compared to the mother country. But the one thing that we had that they believed that they had to crush, and the British Army, the German Hessians, and the British Navy were wholly arms, just arms of the British East India Company, charged with protecting everything that company wanted to do. Well, that's the situation we face today. The government, controlled by the bank, the central bank, is dictating and using as they're just unusually weird thugs using our military services to do what they want. We're not in a position to control the money right now. But what we do have, our Constitution gives us, is the militia. Oh, it doesn't give it to us. See, here I am talking the way they want me to talk. No, they did not give us our militia. But our Constitution does set forth the four militia clauses and recognizes the militia of the several states. The militia of the several states is not something that arises. It is something that is. And the militia of the several states are the authors. When I say authors, I use it in the legal sense, the source, the fountain of the Constitution of the United States. The Constitution of the United States is a creation, a creature of the militia of the several states. Why do I say that? Because the words at the beginning of the Constitution, the preamble, the people, by the way, lifted from the Hebrew Old Testament, the people is the militia of the several states. And you can go to the Hebrew Old Testament, from which our English translations are taken, and the Hebrew phrase ha'am, ha'am, always refers to an armed body, and in most cases, and especially when it's referring to the armed body of the nation of Israel, it refers to the militia of the separate tribes of Israel. And that's a consistent use of that phrase, the people. Let me repeat that in sum. The people is the militia of the several states in the United States. And there are four militia clauses. We talked last time about authority. It's the one thing we have. The one thing we have, and it's put in organization by the four militia clauses. The four militia clauses, the first three clauses, have to do with three classes of people: Congress of the United States, presidents of the United States, so congressmen, presidents, and then also the governors and the legislatures of the states. The fourth militia clause is the Second Amendment, and that clause does not grant power or authority to anyone, but simply recognizes the militia of the several states and guarantees that the militia of the several states will not be debarred, not be deprived of keeping and carrying loaded firearms. The other three militia clauses do grant authority. The other three grant authority, and remember, the militia is the author, the source, the fountain of our Constitution. And by that Constitution, the other three clauses grant authority to those three classes of people I mentioned a while ago. Congressmen, that includes senators, presidents, and governors and legislators of the states, the several states. That means the separate states our Constitution uses. That old common law phrase, the several states of our union, that means the separate, sovereign, independent states analogous to the 12 separate tribes of Israel. And we said authority is from God alone. Just to recap a little bit briefly, is the source, the fountain, the ultimate source of all authority, Romans chapter 13, verses 1 and 2. By the way, those verses there, used by Homeland Security to pervert them, twist them, and use them against people, the people of the United States. And seminars have been held to bring in preachers and pastors and clergymen from whatever name or ilk to educate them according to the government's desires respecting the interpretation of Romans 13:1-2. But if there's anything it says, first and foremost, it starts by establishing not the power of government, but the authority. And the words are very precise, and not always translated correctly there, but it is the authority that Romans 13, 1 and 2 talks about in criminal jurisdiction, by the way. So the people and our Supreme Court says the subset of the people is the militia that is able-bodied at any given time to carry arms, draw no authority from our Constitution, but direct from God. By contrast, our general government, as our founders used to call it, The general government, the national government, sitting in the District of Columbia, draws its limited authority only, and I stress the word only, from the Constitution. And in sum, because the militia of the several states is a subset of the people, our Constitution, I say this one more time to stress it, our Constitution never creates any militia, but rather recognizes it and affirms it. Now, John Locke, upon whom Tom Jefferson relied to pen the Declaration of 76, his writings, particularly his second treatise of government, John Locke, a student of the Bible, a commentator of the Bible, by the way, wrote a commentary on the Bible, a Puritan, a student of John Owen, the great Puritan, said this, John Locke said this, God has furnished men with faculties sufficient to direct them in the way, he capitalizes the word way, W-A-Y, the way they should take if they will but seriously employ them. Allow me to repeat that. God has furnished men with faculties sufficient to direct them in the way they should take if they will but seriously employ them. Now, John Locke's father was a common lawyer. That means he was a lawyer of the common law, a barrister in England. And John had that strong influence in his bones, too, just hanging around with his father. And when John Locke says that God has furnished men with the way they should take, W-A-Y, he is referring to the laws of nature unwritten on the nature of things, creation. That's the first volume to which he refers. The second volume to which he refers is The Laws of Nature's God. That phrase, by the way, both of those lifted from our Declaration of 76. The Laws of Nature, the first volume, unwritten in creation. The Laws of Nature's God, written in our Bibles. That's what he's talking about here. And he says if people will but feel a little, if they will seriously employ these principles that they can learn from these two volumes of God, of his revelation of his will to man, then they will know the way. And I stress that word way because, and John Locke did, because our common law is a way. It's not a list of laws. It is a course to stay on, a way. And that's why the Bible says that God's law is the Torah. And the Torah is from an old, ancient, beyond the Bible, Semitic root. That means the way pointed out with the index finger. The Torah, it is the way. Our Constitution's militia clauses are not dead. They've been ignored for 175 years, but they're not dead. Our Supreme Court likes to use the word dormant. They are dormant. That's what they would say, as they've said about other parts of the Constitution that are ignored. I like to say they are sleeping, S-L-E-E-P-I-N-G. The reason I say sleeping is because that's what that fancy Latin-rooted word dormant means. It means to be asleep, and they are asleep. They're not dead. Each of the first three of the four militia clauses bestows authority, as we'd said before. And bottom line, the authority of the militia of the several states arises, again, I say it so there won't be confusion, arises not from the Constitution. The authority of the militia to keep and bear arms arises not from the Constitution. It arises from God, direct, not through any document, not through any mediator, not through any pope, not through any priesthood, not through any Congress, not through the Supreme Court, not through any institution of government or otherwise, but no, the authority of the militia of the several states comes direct from God. That's what we call when authority comes direct from God, we call that a fundamental right. Not just a right, a fundamental right, and that's what distinguishes the fundamental rights. Some of them are in our Bill of Rights. That's what distinguishes those from rights that may find their source in God but are delegated through men. You see, the authority that folk in government have, if it's truly authority, right, comes to them indirect from God, the authority that comes through the Constitution, for instance. Now, there, every man is authority direct from God. The right to keep and bear arms is one of those rights direct from God. Why do I say that? God didn't, when the Bible was written, for example, there were no firearms. No, but it is the first principle of self-preservation and defense. That's important. But I can also point to the Bible, and you can too, point to the Bible and say that God himself says that the carrying of weapons is a fundamental right. Jesus Christ said that in the gospel. And when his learners, his disciples, his disciplined ones, disciplined to him and his will, which is his law, when they said, "We're going to go out," they said, "What do you want us to carry?" He said, "Well, when you went out before this, I told you to carry nothing. Depend upon the people that you met. Don't even take a weapon. Don't take gold or silver." But the famous words, or should be famous, they aren't, but after he says that, he says this, but now, good translation of the Greek. What he's saying is there's a shift here, and I'm going to tell you how things are different now, because the end is for me now. I'm coming down to the wire, and they're going to murder me, and I'm going to allow it. So now everything's changed. And I came as a lamb before in the first coming, the humble servant, but when I come again, I will come as the Lord of armies, the mighty warrior. And so what I want you to do now is, when you go out, there are two bags I want you to take. I told you not to take before. The first bag is a traveling bag that keeps your goods in it. The second bag that he describes there, and the Greek words are specific, he says, I want you to take a gold and silver bag and take some money with you. See, you're not going to depend upon the people you meet anymore. And then the third thing I want you to take is a sword. And, of course, they said to him, "We have a couple." He said, "That's enough." Matter of fact, he said, "If you don't have one, sell your outer garment." That's the expensive one that you sleep with at night, like a sleeping bag. He said, "Sell that one. You're better off having a sword than you are a sleeping bag." You know, the men that go out on commando raids in our military, there are some of them, but it's against their culture. I won't mention who they are, but they just don't carry sleeping bags. No. Why? Well, because if they carried a sleeping bag, that would keep them from carrying another 100, 200 rounds of 9mm. They carry weapons. They sleep on the ground, and if they have to shiver, they shiver. But it's better to have ammunition than it is a sleeping bag. It's even better to have ammunition than to have food. Now, God says, carry some gold and silver, Jesus Christ speaking, and get you a sword. And the upshot of that on this side, and we're on this side of his phrase, but now, the upshot of all that is, carry a weapon. Carry a weapon. Not to go out and slaughter people, that's not the point, but for self-preservation. You depend now on yourself. You don't depend on others, and that's what he wants us to do now. He does not want us to depend upon others. He does not want us to depend in any way, as much as possible, does not want us to depend upon government. Not at all. He's given us specific marching orders for now. We are not miserable people without orders. We have them specifically, and we need to go learn them. Very specific. Well, our Constitution's militia clauses, I said, are not dead. And because our Constitution, they're sleeping, because our Constitution recognizes and bespeaks only the militia of the several states, watch me, and never the militia of the United States. Let me repeat that. Our Constitution speaks only of the militia of the several states, and never the militia of the United States. Why? Because there is no single militia of the United States, according to our Constitution, any more than there ever was a single militia of the nation of Israel. No, it was a militia of the several separate tribes of Israel. And I can point that out throughout also. You see, God's way is distribution of power. The question was a while ago. It was a good question. I'm glad somebody brought it up. And I thought that John did a good job of feeling that field in that question. But to just follow up on that whole thing about the government of Israel, the government of Israel dispersed power. That's what Jethro, the non-Jew, the priest of Midian, who knows what he was, father-in-law to Moses. He went to Moses and he instructed him. Priest of God he was, instructed Moses on true government. Moses obviously didn't understand. Why? Because he grew up in the bowels of the iron furnace of the evil empire, Egypt, and all he understood was a one-man show, Diocletian style, Rome style, Babylon style, Egyptian style of the pharaohs. That's all he understood, and Jethro instructed him on how to disperse power. That's common law government, friends and neighbors. That's the nation of Israel, God instructing his chosen man how he wants him to do it. And he did through his father-in-law, priest of Midian, outside of the nation of Israel. He understood. But the several states, and never of the United States, that's what our Constitution says. And because our Constitution neither creates the militia of the United States or the militia of any militia, it doesn't create them, nor does it empower our militia. There is no federal militia of the United States. Congress's legislation and loose wording of the courts in our own day, to the contrary, notwithstanding. A lot of things have happened since our Constitution. Good bit of confusion about what our militia is. Our National Guard is not the militia of the several states. Our National Guard is constitutionally unknown. Not saying it's unlawful, that's up for debate, but it certainly is not the militia of the several states. And the oath of our National Guard is not an oath to the Constitution of the state in which the Guardsman serves, necessarily, no. The oath is like the oath of the rest of the military. And the reason for that is so that it wouldn't be the militia of the several states. That's an important point about the oath. It bears repeating, the militia of the several states is a subset of the people. Exercises the authority that establishes and ordains the Constitution of the United States, the authority of the people. Our Constitution does not create petit juries. Our Constitution does not create trial juries. That's what the petite jury is. It recognizes the jury. And the jury duty is the duty of the militiaman. The two duties of the militiaman are reflected in the oath that our Constitution requires all government officials to take. That oath is required, that they are required to take right down to the lowly county officials. I say lowly not because they're less important, but lower because they're less visible. They're, in fact, more important than the ones that are more visible in many ways. But our juries are the duties. Let me back up. The duty of our militia and the oath I was talking about, I didn't want to stray from that, pardon me. The oath is in two parts, to defend our Constitution against enemies, foreign and domestic. It's sometimes worded in different ways. But that phrase, foreign and domestic, reflects the two duties anciently, going back 1,500 years. We can find that oath with variations. But it reflects the two duties of the militia of the several states. Number one, to defend the Constitution, our law of the land, that's what our Constitution is, according to Article 6, to defend the law of the land against enemies foreign, that's the first duty of the militiaman, is armed defense, and domestic, that means here at home, that's the second duty of the militiamen to serve on the jury and to bring actions in court when necessary. Because the actions in a common law court are battle by trial, and actions of the armed militiamen against foreign invaders are trial by battle. Trial by battle and battle by trial before the jury are the two duties of the militia, the militiamen of the several states of the United States. I'll end with this, and I'll repeat it again, Lord willing, if John and Gerard are kind enough to let me come on again. The militia of the several states is not the militia of the United States. And therefore, the militia of the states are under two jurisdictions that are concurrent. Concurrent, that means at the same time, jurisdictions. That is the jurisdiction of the governor of the particular state over the militiamen in that state, and the jurisdiction of the president of the United States over the militia of the several states or any part of the militia of the several states. And it depends upon who first takes that authority, who will have authority over the militia of any particular state. If the president does it first, or if the governor does it first. That's the law of our Constitution, and that's the way it was intended to be. Well, this is Brent Allen Winters, as I say on my radio shows, www.commonlawyer.com. That's the website. You can find my books also at Amazon.com, including a book entitled Militia of the Several States, a primer. You can find that book there, and it's instructive. And the things that I'm saying here are taken largely, the same principles and the same points from that particular book. You can find other books I've written, including that are instructive on this point, including the Winters Annotated Bible. A common lawyer translates from the original Hebrew, Aramaic, and Greek tongues and comments, almost 24,000 footnotes throughout the 66 books of the Bible. Well, that's all I have, John and Gerard. And if you want to let people ask questions, I'm willing to try to answer some.
Okay, great. Thank you. All right, we'll open up the Q&A. We'll take a few questions and star 6 to get into the Q&A. But we'll take a couple of questions, and then we're going to move over to Gerard. Gerard's going to be talking tonight about action. But let's take our first caller. It's 678 number. You should be hearing you're unmuted in a second. 678, go right ahead. You got the mic. Give us your first name and your state.
It's Eric from Georgia. Georgia, Eric. Chief Justice John Marshall, I think he was a distant cousin of Thomas Jefferson. He seemed to be at odds with Jefferson, which makes me think, this guy had, I don't know enough about John Marshall to say he was into centralizing power, but I think he was, and Jefferson's defense, I think when people say he plagiarized John Locke, his response, I believe, if I'm correct, was that he never intended to write anything new because he was writing the law, which was old. But anyway, it's John Marshall, I think, who was responsible for putting our judges in these imperious robes. And I really hope that, when we get to the other side, and this question is for Brent, of course, that we get rid of those robes, those stinking robes. God, they anger me now that I know what I know. Well, my question, Brent, is, love your book, talk about it all day long, but I wanted to ask from your perspective, and John can answer too if he knows, but this thing, this idea, and I was born in 1970, and it's been throughout my life, and I've seen it here. Throughout my entire life, I've seen it in books, I've seen it in movies, TV shows, and it's even in real life, as an anecdote from an attorney that I knew. And it's this idea that people who get representation by attorneys that need a public defender specifically are scumbags. And I want to know, through your study, do you know when this turn happened, when people decided to, or just, I'm sure it happened, as you say, by creep in your book at one point. That's a good phrase. These things happen by creep, by steady creep or slow creep, where people just decided to give their trust to the government, and that anyone that needs representation is, in fact, a scumbag? You know what I'm talking about? Have you seen this?
I can talk to that from my experience, being around and having interaction with these lawyers in court. But I want to back up, and you made some comments that are really fascinating, or brought up points that were, of course, John Marshall was a distant cousin of Jefferson. They differed on a good many points. Marshall was a humble acting guy. From what I read, I never knew him, obviously, but he was down at the market in Washington, D.C. once, when it was more of a rustic town, and he was looking at some of the things that were being sold, and as he was passing through, going to work to the court one morning, and a man had just bought a turkey. Of course, in those days, there was no refrigeration. He had to get it home, and he was an older gent, and he didn't want to carry this big bird, and he had other things to carry too. And he turned around and he saw Marshall, and Marshall didn't cut a real impressive figure. He was pretty stretched out and tall, but he was kind of lanky and galoot-ish, and his clothes didn't fit right, and they didn't always look clean. And I don't know if he did, he probably chewed tobacco. Most people did in those days. But this fellow turned around and saw him and thought he was just a loafer, and he offered him a quarter to carry this turkey home with him and help him carry the turkey home. So Marshall didn't say a word. He just took the turkey in hand and walked home with this fellow, followed him, and then he paid him. Never said a word about it, but other people saw this and knew who Marshall was, and that it surprised them that he did this. Well, he was doing those kind of things often. He was that kind of a guy. I could tell you other stories that are fascinating about him. The robes, you're talking about the robes that judges wear. Why do judges wear robes, and why do they wear black robes? Well, they wear black robes in America because of something that happened in England, and that was the death of William and Mary. The death of William and Mary. Before then, the judges in England, and of course in America, wore very colorful, beautiful robes because they tried to compete with the Roman priests. And England, the history of England is the history of the war, the jurisdictional war between the courts of Rome, the church courts, and the common law courts. And so when the common law ends of court came in place, the common lawyers, as they were competing and fighting with the Roman priest, because a Roman priest is a lawyer. He's a lawyer of the canon law. That's all he is, and that's what he's educated to be and highly educated to be. And they said, we've got to do something to save our common law because Rome is creeping in with their law of the city. That's what the canon law is. So they wore these colorful robes, and they rode mules like the priest did, and they wore skull caps like the priest, and they formed these inns of court where they lived like monks. Although they did get married, they lived like monks. Sir Francis Bacon, a great lawyer of equity, he lived in the inns of court just to get away from his wife. There's a long story about that that's fascinating. But they were competing. Well, when William and Mary died, and I don't know how the thing got started, but they were beloved in the English-speaking world because they were Protestant, and because they upheld the common law in their own way. They had their problems, and who knows? They were instrumental in starting the Bank of London, which was a bad thing, but they were beloved for whatever reason. And when they passed away, all of the judges in England shed their colorful robes and donned black ones, and the judges in common law countries, which are the English-speaking world, have been mourning the death of William and Mary ever since. And I haven't run into a judge, though, that knows why he wears black robes yet. I have run into one lawyer that knew why, but I haven't run into any judges. That's why. Now, as far as the lawyers in federal court, there are the ones that are provided. there are two kinds. There are those that have a contract, a very well-paying contract with the federal government to represent people that are indigent. And they're not allowed by contract to do anything else but represent indigent people. Although I've discovered that they do a lot of things besides do that and represent a lot of people and take on other cases. But it's a matter of contract, and so I can't complain about it. I can't bring a lawsuit in court to make sure that they follow their, that they obey their contract with the federal government, because that's between the federal government and them, and I'm not, as the, our common law says, I have no privity in that relationship. That's between them, and if the federal government doesn't want to sue them for breaking their contract, they don't have to. But I've seen them do it in places and ways that have hurt me and hurt my clients. And I brought it up before the appellate courts of the United States, and of course their attitude is, well, that's not before a what you brought before the court is not a contract problem, so we don't have any jurisdiction to say anything about what they've done here and breaking their contract. But their contracts are lucrative, and their contracts usually say that they're entitled to as much as the United States attorney or an assistant United States attorney. These contracts are really lucrative. And it's a contradiction in law. I've brought up where these lawyers that the government appoints that have these contracts, I've brought up that they are agents of the government, and the courts have now. I did it to say that this can't work. It's a conflict of interest. How do you represent a man in a criminal case who's indigent? That means he's poor. How do you represent him while you're also an agent of the federal government? How do you do that? An agent of the federal government. You see, a lawyer, and the word attorney means agent. You're an agent of your client. That means you have a fiduciary obligation to do a whole lot of things to his benefit and not to yours. You have to be loyal, number one, no divided loyalty. Well, if you're an agent of the federal government, paid by the federal government, and you're an agent of your client and the federal government, the United States is trying to throw your client in jail and bring an action against him called a criminal action, your loyalty is divided. And beyond that, our law says the appearance of disloyalty or divided loyalty is divided loyalty. That's how seriously our law has always taken that. Just case in point, to put legs on this, something you might understand, Ted Cruz owes loyalty to Canada, a foreign country.
Yeah.
Therefore,
you brought that up before, and that's a good
yeah,
point.
Yeah, therefore, his loyalty is divided. He says, well, I'm a citizen of the United States, too. Well, there's no such thing. That's a fiction. It can't be. You can't be a citizen of two countries. Why we allow such madness, I have no idea. Because that's divided loyalty. Well, the same thing applies to these lawyers that claim to be working, and if they don't do what the federal judge says in that case, because they're there at his imperious breath, he can end that contract, you see. And then there are other kinds of lawyers called the name escapes me. I know people that do this. They get their names. If you're a member of a federal court, appellate court or federal court, you can have your name put on the rolls to be drawn up in case somebody needs a lawyer and doesn't have any money. And the federal government will pay you $90-$100 an hour, whatever the going rate is for stuff like that. And I have known some lawyers that have been extremely effective that are in that position. But the fellows that get the contracts, I just tell you, as a matter of experience, they're dangerous. I wanted to bring that up. Now, that was the crux. Was that the crux of your question? I said I brought
well,
it up. Actually, Eric, you brought it up.
Yeah, that really, I mean, it covers it really well. I can't ask for any more. I was just wondering, because you mentioned in your book, you talk about how one of the reasons why common law is didn't call it the English common law is because you're talking about people being politically correct during, I guess, just prior to our war for independence, because people were starting to really turn against England and the motherland, and to refer to the English common law, which is bring that up. I think you make a point about that.
Oh, I do. I do make a point of that. And yeah, they didn't bring that up a lot. They didn't, and they brought up, for example, they never brought up the Greek philosophers except to use them as illustrations of bad things. They did that, for example, in the Federalist Papers. And the English jurists, the English writers, never distinguished between democracy and republic. Never did. To the Greeks, the ones they say invented the idea of republic, they didn't. To the Greeks, a republic and a democracy were the same thing. And by the way, the founders, the people that began our country, wanted no part of democracy, and they wanted no part of republicanism as the Greeks understood it. And I try to stress this point so people don't get confused. We are not a country under republicanism. We are a common law country. That's different, wholly different. We do have, and our Constitution says this, a republican form of government. That's very weak. It's important, but it's weak. But a republican form of government has nothing to do with our courts, and our Supreme Court has said that. A republican form of government has one requirement, one and only one, and that is that a particular state under a constitution, a particular state, sends congressmen to Congress to be seated. If a state has done that, our Supreme Court says we're not at liberty, our federal courts are not at liberty to look into how they did it, if there's any improprieties in how they did it, or violations of due process. All the Republican clause, the Republican form clause, requires, and the Constitution says the federal government will guarantee this. The federal government, indeed, will guarantee, make sure that each state sends a representative to Congress. That's the end of the meaning of the Republican form clause of our Constitution. Our government of the United States and none of our states are not republicanism. All that is democracy, according to the Greek writers. We are a common law country. We are not a country of Western culture. Not ultimately, no, we aren't. We're not continental, European continental. We are a country of the common law. That's not a statement about any particular kind of people. That's a statement about culture. And the common law, there have been many names of it through the centuries. The law of the land is another name. But the Volkerrecht, or the folk law, is another name. But it is something that is common to all of mankind. And it's been tried all over the world, but it's never stuck. Every people, it's something that arises among men by nature because we're sons of a common father, Adam. That's the teaching, and that's what's apparent in that first volume of the Laws of Nature.
Okay, that's excellent. I really appreciate it. And just to make sure I have this clear, you did say that the Constitution is, in fact, a creature of the militia. Is that correct?
Correct, because the militia, as our Supreme Court has so well pointed out, year 2008, not long ago, the militia is a subset of the people. The people, according to even the Federalist Papers, which were written to promote things, but promote the Constitution, it's politically motivated, true, but it does reveal things. One of the things it reveals is that the militia are the people. But that was true before the Federalist Papers, and people knew that in common law countries.
Hey, excellent. Brent, thank you very much.
Can you give us the court case, the 2008 court case concerning that?
That,
do you know it offhand?
Yes, I do, and it's so famous, but it's one of those things that just is not coming to mind. It was the one that gave okay. It was the one that gave that fellow in Washington, D.C. He said he was a retired cop. He said, I have a right to have a loaded gun in my house. And the government of D.C. said, no, you don't. We took it to the Supreme Court. And the Heller, H-E-L-L-E-R, the Heller case.
Okay.
And the Supreme Court said, you do have the right. I've got to say this because it's refreshing to hear. Go to Justia, the website Justia, and you can see the type in Heller 2008. You should be able to pull it up. You can listen not only to the justices of the Supreme Court delivering their opinion, you can also listen to the arguments The oral argument.
Interesting.
Oh, it's fascinating. Listen. Well, it's a good. And then after that, on the heels, that
is Justia, right?
I'm sorry.
You said the website Justia, J-U-S-T-I-A.
Yeah, I think it's Justia. They've got their recordings of all the, and they're putting more on all the time. But you can also then after that case, Heller, the companion case to Heller that followed on its heels, was McDonald versus the City of Chicago. Heller established the right to keep a weapon at the federal level on federal property and federal jurisdiction. And then McDonald, and these were orchestrated, by the way, they had this all planned out. McDonald versus the City of Chicago went to the Supreme Court and established that the states, the individual states, cannot take, and the juridical entities of states, cities, and counties, cannot take away the right to keep a loaded gun in your house and to carry it. The Seventh Circuit then, following up on that, which is in Chicago, another one of those guys so famous I can't remember his name, but he wrote the opinion, and anyway, he said to the state of Illinois, he said, you fellows have 180 days to get some kind of concealed carry legislation through your legislature, and if you don't, we here on the Seventh Circuit are going to do it for you. And the reason he said that was, and he said this, so many states have got concealed carry legislation now, you're out of step, Illinois. You got to get in line. And again, he said, this was what was amazing about it. If you don't do it, we're going to do it for you. But Illinois did it. They're still balking on other things. But those cases, to read them, is refreshing because it provides the revelation of a momentum. And the court, the federal court, Posner, Judge Posner, most famous appellate federal judge in the country, he's the one that delivered that opinion. And you see the judges following the states. And that's what Posner did. And so it's no small thing to say that the people of the United States can gain this critical mass that incites the powerful, famous people to follow. Because as I'd said a while back, the people in the federal government that are so famous and the people that we call our founders, those people were followers. You don't stay in public office unless you can resound, put into words what people are thinking, a critical mass. And that's what our founders did. That's what the Federalist Papers are. That's what our Constitution is. It's not the mind of the founders, no. It's the mind of the people of the United States. And those are the people that are ignored, and those are the ones that made it happen, the folks whose names we've never heard, the fellows that put it all on the line, some of them died. Now, I know the founders put it all on the line, too. I'm not belittling what they did, but I want to point out the power of the people. And it's not a majority power. Our common law does not operate on a majority principle at any level. It operates on a critical mass, a critical mass. And that's, if you look that up, you'll find that it has little to do with chemistry and what causes things to trigger and happen. And that's what the militia of the several states is all about. And my point again, as I've done before, we'll go over this again if I'm able to keep coming on.
Okay, we appreciate that. That's a lot of good information, and there's another new way of looking at critical mass. I never thought about that, but when you said it, I realized, yeah, I've heard that before in a chemical reaction, so to speak. Okay, let us take our next question. Take at least one more question. Again, unknown. You've just been unmuted. You're 828. Can you give us your first name and your state, please?
This is Barrett from North Carolina.
Derek from North Carolina. Go right ahead, Derek.
Barrett.
Yes.
I'm the county organizer here. My question about the militia is what authority does it take to muster the militia?
It takes the authority, according to the Constitution, of a piece of legislation from the state legislature. Now this is why we were talking before about the sheriff and the importance of the sheriff. He receives his paycheck from the state government, but he's answerable, and this is the beauty of it. he's answerable to the people in his county, and he's sworn to do his job there in their benefit. And the militia is mustered through the authority of government, And the sheriff is one of those people. And if the legislature of a state won't do that, I just had a guy, then the sheriff needs to be involved. I just had a fellow contact me, had my militia book. He was out in the Nebraska panhandle, and he said, I'm taking the model militia statute you have in the back of that book, and I put one in the back of the book. I mulled over it like a dog worries over a bone for a long time. And I finally got it down to where I thought that what I was saying was constitutional at every point, but also practical. Things that aren't in the Constitution are fleshed out there. How the militia of your state, North Carolina, for example, is to choose its officers. You're the president of the Confederacy, Jefferson Davis, refused an appointment as a militia officer from Washington, D.C., because he said, and he rightly said, the states, according to our Constitution, the states have the power to appoint the militia officers, and it can be chosen locally. The sheriff has the power to muster the people. The people, remember, are the men of the county able to bear arms. He can muster them under that old doctrine, posse comitatus. But also, I argue, he can muster them as a militia, as the militia, because that's what they are. And that's why it's important that we emphasize and stress all government is local, said old Tip O'Neill. And all government is local, O'Neill said all politics is local. I say all government is local, and it is. And the sheriff is key in this whole thing. And he has the power to muster able-bodied men. I've seen it happen in my own county, in my own little rural county. Effectively happened, and I have the story of it. That's how I opened the book, The Militia of the Several States, how that happened when back when I was about 20 years old in my home county. It was an emergency situation, didn't have time to call the governor. The marshal showed up on the scene and did it. And by the way, when the marshal showed, or the marshal, when the sheriff showed up, the men were already there, armed, and had their shotguns and other things. One fellow had a bow and arrow. They didn't know what to do with him. They thought he was a little nuts. They put him on a building across the road, told him just to stand down until he was told what to do. But the rest of them were armed and ready. The deputy showed up. Then Sheriff Red Simpson showed up, and he took control of the situation. And everything ended peaceably with only one shot being fired. Nobody got killed, but it sure did wound the pride of one of the fellows that was breaking the peace. That's in the front of the book. That's how the book begins, telling that story. And then the book ends with a model state militia statute. I refer that to you. It's for your use. It doesn't do me any good to keep these books. They're scattered about. People are buying them, and I'm glad they're buying them. And it's designed to introduce people to the four militia clauses of our Constitution, make it simple, fundamental, because it is simple and fundamental, flesh out a little bit of the common law around it, and then say, what can we do to make this happen according to the law of the land, our Constitution?
Okay, now.
Give us the name of that book again, Brent.
The name of the book, John, is Militia of the Several States, a Primer. Let me get my glasses on so I can read this subtitle. It says Our Constitution's Answer to Its Enemies.
Okay,
by Brent Allen Winters. You can order that, I believe, at Amazon.com. Yeah, you can. Get that at Amazon.com.
I definitely will. Next question. Just one more quick one. Now, isn't it the militia under the Constitution is charged with enforcing the laws?
Yeah, you make a good point, and I flesh that out in the book, too. The militia has jurisdiction in just the areas, the militia of the several states, just the areas that the Constitution talks about. Enforcing the laws is part of that. Putting down insurrections is another. But that doesn't mean that the militia does not have jurisdiction to do a whole lot of other things, as long as they're not unconstitutional. For example, just flat helping people. And the beauty of the militia of the several states, I'm not the first one to bring this out, you have a group of men between the ages of 20, and that's what I would recommend, although I've changed my position. I think in my book I say 18, but anywhere, somewhere around in there, able-bodied, carry arms, 20 and 45, say, for example. You've got all men in a county that can do that. You've got a lot of skill there. A lot of men know how to do a whole lot of things, everything from gunsmithing to being lawyers, helping with legal problems, to being construction workers, to being heavy equipment operators and welders, and or to being accountants. You've got all sorts of skills there, and all of them are extremely important to the job of the militia. You know, the militia has the job in ancient England. They had the job in their local county of maintaining the bridges, keeping them in good repair. Because in the case of an emergency, men and equipment had to be moved. And they didn't want, if a creek or a river was at flood stage or a full bank, it was their job. And that was the law, by the way. That was the law. And also to maintain rivers for traffic. In a county, it would be you'd have to have men, and you should have men, that had the ability to keep roads passable in case an enemy tried to destroy them, to put sewage lines and water lines back online in case an enemy tried to destroy them, electricity in case an enemy tried to destroy them. You need men that are linemen, the men that understand telephone communications, men that understand cell phones. Well, you'd have all that to varying degrees. If we would tap into that at the local level, and it would give a reason and a purpose, give every man who's involved a stake in local government and a stake in national government.
Let me just one side thing here, Brent. Have you heard of in your studies the Committee of Safety? Have you heard anything about that?
Yes, and I've read about it, and I see the importance of it.
I think we've been told by some, I'm just studying this right now, but we've been told by some that they have the ability to call for the safety, call in the militia for safety. I don't know if you're familiar with anything of that nature, and if you are, maybe you can just comment on that.
Well, just what I know about it is it was an important part of our separation from Britain, but the militias of, important part in a day when... Well, it was just an important time. And the name is Committee of Safety. But I argue, name whatever the name is, it's still the militia of the several states. Now, during those days, things got real. Well, they got one-third of the colonists, approximately, were for separation from Britain. One-third were diehard royalists. They were for the Crown of England. One-third didn't care one way or the other. So that created a dangerous environment for everybody. And the people have discovered, reading about those days, the memoirs of some of the Continental soldiers and writing about what happened, they discovered that the people that threatened their lives were the boys and girls they went to school with when they were growing up. And that's the kind of subversion that was going on. So because of that subversion in that day, the Committees of Safety became shadow government. Local shadow government, and they bordered on vigilante in many instances. Things that obviously at that time there was a need for that, but my position is until we're pressed to the wall, until there's no other choice, we need to seek other options. I would like to see the militia of the several states brought to the forefront and brought out of sleep. And put in position according to the terms of our Constitution. The militia of the several states has done their duty under the Constitution. We have remained an armed people. It is that class of people called congressmen and that class of people called presidents and state legislators and governors, those three classes of people, they have not done their duty. They have breached their duty. They should be thrown from office for ignoring their duty. Congress is supposed to provide a uniform law for all militias of all of the states. Congress has no power to enforce it under the Constitution, but they have the power to provide it and say, here's the manual of arms. to put it in general military terms, that every militia of every state is supposed to follow, and then the state legislatures are supposed to act consistent with that and establish how the militia is to be mustered, how they're to be paid, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I address those things in my model militia statute in that book.
All right, appreciate that. And, you know, we recently wrote a paper, mandamus, ultimately an information and a mandamus, to all the governors of all 50 states. And we gave them an order, ultimately, from we the people, to pay attention to the Constitution and to start to reestablish and fund and prepare and bring forward the militia in the states. And we're going to do a follow-up on that, too. But all right, we appreciate your time, Brent, and we'll look forward to have you back next week. And it's getting a little late. We want to move over to Gerard. Gerard's got a message to bring tonight, so we're going to go over to lecture mode. And after this, we'll go back into a Q&A. Gerard, are you here? He's going to be talking about action tonight, ultimately. I think it may be able to have a couple of different topics for this. But Gerard? Star 6 to talk.
He shows up on a panel, but I don't see him called in.
Hmm.
He was called in earlier. I don't know. He must have got dropped.
Yeah, I saw him before, too. So let me, maybe someone could try to give him a call, see if he's having problems. Let me just send him an IM here. All right, well, what we'll do is we'll move over to Q&A for a short while we're waiting for Gerard to come in.
Hey, I never got a message like that before.
What kind of message?
We are experiencing technical difficulties. Please call back later. Boop, and they hung me up.
Well, we got the emergency number in there, too, if you need it.
Well, I just dialed back in. We'll see how it goes.
Okay. All right. Well, you got the mic. French is finished, and we're in lecture mode right now. So.
Right. I want to take off on some of the stuff that Brent was talking about because it kind of fits right into what I want to talk about tonight. And he talked about these different laws, and I forget the term he used, but he said it means they're asleep. And I forget what it was that they called it before they were asleep. But the fact is they were asleep. And I don't know what happened first, but I kind of think that the people went to sleep first, then the law went to sleep. But either way it happened, the fact is we've been sleeping, and that's why we are where we are, you know, as far as what we've allowed our servant government to get away with. And, you know, it would be very nice to get the militias reinstated, but we have a problem in this country. The problem is that they vilified the word militia. It's being bandied about quite a bit today, and it's good because it's getting resurrected once again. It was at the point that you didn't even want to whisper it. And so they've taken that word, and they've, even though it's in our Constitution, they got everybody afraid to even talk about it. So, you know, when they had the problem in Harney County, Burns, Oregon, they did start a committee of safety, and they started it under duress. And the committee of safety has the authority to call in the militia. And you know, when these things are going on, like in Bundy's, where they're killing, you know, property, life and property, there's no question that the militia should, you know, be activated. So the committee of safety that was started in Harney County, it was under a duress thing. And, you know, some people like to call them committees of, they call them committees of assembly. And that might be a little bit less radical, maybe, than the people that understand that committees of safety are like a shadow government. Although I understand that the general understanding today is that a committee of safety is like a town hall meeting with no town board, where the people just get together and they discuss problems that's maybe not being taken care of by the town board, local issues, local things, and try to come up with solutions. Now, in Burns, one of the leaders, you know, because they come in and they voted a leadership of seven people, and that was Chris Bryles. He came in And right away he got on it. He said, because I heard that there was this committee that had the authority to call the militia. And he said, you better dang well believe I was going to be on it, because if there's a committee that can start a revolution, I want to be there to stop it. So, you know, I mean, you got spoken like a true leader, right? This is serious stuff. However, I think that because they've vilified the militia, and I believe it started with the Alfred P. Murr bombing, I think that was a false flag that was set up in order to discredit the militia, and they did a real good job through the years of making the militia a word that only dared to be whispered about. And so we find ourselves in this situation where the courts are lawless, and we say, they can't do that, but they do that. And every time we throw something at them, they ignore it. And so what's the answer? The answer is that we need a critical mass. And so, you know, when you put paperwork in, like, you know, we could have started this movement trying to, well, we did, actually. We went to the courts. We started with the committee man, because there's something out of the mosaic system that our law was designed on that was supposed to bring the candidates out of the populace, from the people, from the bottom, and send them up to the top. And what we found out was, is they turned that system on its head, and they were delegating from the top down to the bottom. And so now the president of the party picks the candidates and sends the petitions down to the lowly representatives out there, the committee men, to carry them. And he tells them what candidates they're going to put in. And that's not at all the way that it's supposed to be. Those committee men are supposed to walk their petitions in their precincts and get 5% of the signatures of their precinct. And then they represent that precinct. And then they're supposed to go out and look for the candidates and wade them. And then they're supposed to go back to their people and see what the issues are, and then question the candidate to see if he meets that muster. That's not happening. And it's not happening because of what they've done with party rules and how they've turned them from an elected position to an appointed position. Every committeeman in New York State, anyway, and I think the nation, has been turned into an appointed guy. They might run a petition, but it's only to be appointed at the first meeting by the chair of the party in the county. So they've taken, and then what they do is they have half of them come on odd years and the other half on the even years, so that they're never done with all of them, so the half that's there can reappoint the other half, and there's no elected committeemen really in the system. So we took them to court, and the judges looked at us like we had three heads. And of course, they're not going to do this because the parties have set it up. And so the judges fear the parties. And so we then stumbled across, you know, U.S. versus William, and we realized that the strong man is the judge. And in the Bible, it says if you want to take a house, you got to bind down the strong man. Well, who's the strong man? It's the judge. And it's the judges that are running this, and it's the judges that are facilitating it and perpetuating it. So we started filing papers in the court to try to get into that through due process. You know, we have a great due process system. It's still there. It's still in place. But it's going to take the people to enforce it. So basically, we didn't start this movement. We started it at the people, but then we jumped up to the top, to the judges, because we knew, look at, they're claiming the Constitution is still in effect. Some more. And so if the Constitution's still in effect, we should be able to petition for redress of grievance, and we should be able to get an answer. So we went in, and it's kind of like, I like to use the analogy of when we went to the door of the castle and knocked on it, and boom, 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 and we said, hey, we want to see the king. And the guy opens the door like in The Wizard of Oz, and he goes, no way, nobody sees the king. And he slams the door shut. And we're all sad, and we turn away, and we walk away. But then we get our courage up, and we go back, and we knock on the door. Hey, we just want to ask a question. We want to know if the king is for the people or against the people. Is he still ruling under the divine right to rule? Is he still following the Constitution? Is he still following natural law? Or are we just slaves? Can he do with us what he will? And the doorman says, go away. It's not going to even answer that. No answers to you. And so we turn around dejectedly and we walk down, and we step down the first three steps to the castle there, and we get to the bottom of it, and we realize, hey, we don't have a king. The people are the king. What's going on here? So that's what National Liberty Alliance did. We went, we knocked on the door, we asked questions, we even got stronger and gave orders. And we said, you need to answer this, and they refuse. And so what are we to do? What's the people to do? And then the people go, what are you going to do, National Liberty Alliance? You made all this wonderful, pristine paperwork. You've put it in the courts, and they're ignoring it, and they're defaulted, and they're in contempt. And what are you going to do, National Liberty Alliance? What's your next step? Well, let me tell you something. National Liberty Alliance has done it. National Liberty Alliance have given the people the hammer and the nails, and you guys are the carpenters. You need to pick up those nails and that hammer, and you need to drive them home. And the only way that's going to happen is if you amass in your communities and you go and you see your sheriffs and you hold your sheriff's feet to the fire. I ran into my sheriff last night as I went to visit my sister in a rehab, and he was coming out because his mother's in there. And I had a conversation with him, and I asked him if he was getting our paperwork, and he kind of said, well, yeah, you know, they go in the room there. I said, listen, that paperwork's for you, and you need to be reading it. You shouldn't have people intercepting it because it's addressed to you. And I said, you know, we're working in the courts, in the federal courts. I said, we're in Oregon right now, but we're going to be here soon, and I hope you're ready for us when we come. I said, because let me tell you what. I said, I know that they're calling me a paper terrorist in my county. And that doesn't bother me. I said, because I'll give you the definition of a paper terrorist. That's somebody that fills out constitutional paperwork that the government can't answer, and they're terrified by it. So you're right. We are paper terrorists. And I told him, and I'm not scared of that. The only thing I'm scared of is the lit match, because I'm a paper terrorist. But anyway, he laughed, and I said, look it, the sheriffs, we're sending paperwork out, and we're making the sheriffs aware, and we're bringing in sworn affidavits of crimes. And when you get a sworn affidavit of a crime, you have a duty to act. You have no choice. And I said, and so when you don't act, you're committing felony rescue. And if that's the case, we're going to ask you to step down. You need to step up or step down. Lead, follow, or get out of the way, because the people are coming. And when you step down, we'll make sure we get somebody appointed that knows the law and that will follow the law. And that's the prescription that's out there right now for you people. National Liberty Alliance can't get you a new sheriff. That's up to you. I mean, we are facilitators. We train. We teach people how to do things, and we teach the Constitution, and we teach the fundamental principles. And that's what's necessary. That's what our forefathers said, that if you don't think that the people are up to it, you don't take the right away. You educate them. And that's what National Liberty Alliance has done. We're educating the people. And now it's up to the people to come together. And whether you start committees of safety or assemblies, you need to assemble. You need to find a hall somewhere, and you need to bring this to the people. Look, we've written habeas corpuses, the Great Writ. And the Great Writ is about preventing unlawful jailings. And that's all we have today. We have victimless crimes. We have more people in jail unlawfully than any other country in the world. The America leads the world in people who are in jail for victimless crimes. We should be real proud of that. So if you're not asleep, then you have to do something about it. And what are you going to do? You need to be going out, and you need to be going to the sheriff, and you need to be going in groups of 4 and 5 and 10 and 20 and 100 even. You know, when the sheriffs all went around to the tea parties when they first got popular, because they knew if they didn't get friendly with the tea parties, they weren't going to get elected. We pushed through a congressman here in New York that they didn't want because we carried his paper. We became committee men, and we became jurists. And grand jurists, because we held the system's feet to the fire, and that's what you people need to do now. It's in your hands. We have paperwork that shows all the authority, all the law, all the things that you would need to argue the case. It can't be argued any other way. It rests in law, common law, in tradition. It shows the power. It shows the authority. We've done wonderful papers front and back, up and down, to the sheriffs, to the Congress. Everybody has gotten these papers. There is no excuse anymore. So now they've defaulted. And the habeas corpus, I've recently come to find out that, look, at you put all these actors in. You put the prosecutor and you put the judge, but you also put the jailer in. And ultimately, the jailer is supposed to open the door, because it's to present the body, bring the body to the court so that we can see the charges that you have. Answer the charges of why you are taking this person and incarcerating them and depriving them of their life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. You need to answer the charges. We want to know what the constitutional criminal, what part of the Constitution or the criminal code did they break, actually. Well, when you put a paper in that says we command and you need to answer this, and they don't answer it and they default, and you get a notice of default, and then you get a notice of being in contempt with opportunity to amend, and you ignore that. Well, where do you go from there? And then you go to an indictment. I'll tell you where it goes from there. You go to an indictment. And at some point, the sheriffs need to enforce the indictment and the subpoenas or whatever else comes in. Look, they have opportunity to amend. There's a week to 2 weeks between each separate stage of a habeas corpus. And in the Hammonds case, that was put in December. That thing's got mold on it. Let's get moving. It's not up to National Liberty Alliance. It's up to the people and the sheriffs. And you have to go out and get them. And you have to tell them, look, this is the law. You have to uphold the law. You took an oath, and you're the top cop. We voted for you. You're not a lackey for the courts. You're the people's sheriff. You're supposed to uphold the law for the people. And when the government doesn't do it, it's your job. And look, we'll help you. You can amass us under the militia clause, under the posse comitatus. You can do these things legally. And guess what? If you do them in force, the government will stand down. Believe me, they will. Because there's only one thing they fear more than the parties, and that's the people. And then, you know, what the proof we have of that is when we go into the court with our court watchers, the judges get nervous. My goodness, you get five or six people there with pens on a pad, and they start stuttering. They don't know what to say. So that's the power of the people. You know, I started out with knocking on the castle door and the king going, go away, the guard, the king, nobody sees the king, no way, no how. Well, we're going to end this with the end. What happened at the end in The Wizard of Oz? Dorothy, click your heels together. You had the power all along. There's no place like home. You can go home. You got the ruby slippers. Click your heels. Well, guess what, people? Your heels need to be clicking, and they need to be clicking down the road to the sheriff's office. There should be thousands of heels clicking down the road. You should be marching down the road and asking the sheriffs to join the front of the march of the people in order to reinstitute and to enforce and obey those laws that were put here for our freedoms. Don't go look at the National Liberty Alliance to do the next step. The next step is in the people's hands. We've empowered you. We gave you the hammers and the nails. Pick them up. Go build the house. If you build it, they'll come. You got to get moving doing this. Look, if we tried to build like we did with the committee man from the bottom, and we did try, and we did pretty good, actually. We actually reinstituted the parties the right way and had a meeting in Kingston, New York. And really, you know, we do have a active real party that's elected, but nevertheless, it didn't work because there was no mass movement. And so now we have these habeas corpuses. We have these papers. We have a standard for you to a flag, so to speak, to wave. These are sworn documents, affidavits, legal processes that were put into the due process assembly line that they can't be removed from. the court is like a factory, and there's a belt, and it goes through, and it stops at each department, and it goes through the process, and it gets stamped, and it gets moved through until trial. And let me tell you something. Somebody asked me when I was on a radio show, when's the trial going to be, and when do you think they'll be doing it? Guess what? There is no trial. The trial is over because they've defaulted on their habeas corpus, and it's just about the same as if a pettit jury said not guilty. The fact that they didn't answer the charges means that the charges were not proper, and they went away, and there is no double jeopardy on that. You had false, bogus charges because you could have answered, and you didn't answer, and the people have a lawful right to ask you and to demand and require, never mind demand, require. You can demand things from the king all day, but he's only required to give you certain things. So you go require it because they're required. And you need to hold their feet to the fire because that's where we're at. And you know what? This country, the things that go on with SWAT teams and all the horrible things that go on in this nation, we are in Armageddon. Even if you don't know it, it's happening all around you. Open your eyes up. People are losing their heads in other countries over religious things. It's going to come here, Sharia law. This is Armageddon. You better wake up because it's here. And the only way we're going to stop it is if we turn our faces to him. He said, if those people who call themselves by my name repent and turn their face to me, I shall heal their land. Now, he didn't say that lightly. He didn't say, maybe I'll heal their land. He said, if those people that call themselves by my name turn their faces, repent and turn their faces towards me, I will heal their land. And that means he will heal us. But we have to wake up first. We have to wake ourselves up, and we have to wake that law up. And that's where we're at. And that's the answer to this thing. The answer is in the people. You had the power all along. Click your heels together and go home. It's time. I'm done. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Gerard. All right, we'll move over now to Q&A, and let me set that up. Anybody who would like to ask a question or make a comment, star 6 to get into the queue, star 6. Gerard, you going to pick up the Q&A here?
Yeah, I just want to say one more thing I forgot, and that is that habeas corpus is more heavily weighted on the jailer. He's supposed to open them doors.
Absolutely.
And when the time comes, that sheriff can go to the jail and say, let our people go. And if he doesn't do it, he can be arrested with an indictment. And then the deputy jailer can try it. So that's the power. And that's where you're at, people. Okay?
So this now is a call to action. And we've been trying to make this call to action. And I think tonight we did it pretty well. And on Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here in this room, we'll be organizing our call to action. You know, we will bring in together all of the district leaders and the state leaders and even the county organizers and members, everybody. And we're going to be talking about the things that we need to do. And so it's time for people now to start organizing their state, to really focus in on that. All hands on deck for that purpose and that for us to accomplish that goal now. Because now is the time to push forward all the work that we've been working on for the past 3 years. We are organized enough across the states. We're in every single state of the union. It's time now to drive this thing down to every single county within your state. And that's your job. And bring these people together. And one of the things we're going to be doing is working to initiate the committees of safety in every county in America. And the main reason for that is to give people something to do. Look at all of these Liberty Group people, and we're all part of that. I know I've been for many, many years now. I've been pretty active in this stuff. And we get quite frustrated. You know, everything we've done, we have no power. We have no authority. That's because we didn't believe in ourselves enough, nor were we organized or educated enough to know that we really do have that power. We really do have that authority. And now we want to bring to these liberty-minded people who can understand this message very quickly concerning the Committee of Safeties, that the purpose of the Committee of Safeties is to bring the people in the community together to discuss the problems that they see with their government and decide to do something. You know, there is a huge movement that's been going forward for quite a few years now against the Agenda 21. but there has been very little accomplishment against it because the people didn't really come with power and authority. But now when you come together with the Committee of Safety and you come together and you bring together within your county and eventually within your towns, but we'll start off in the counties, and you bring together, come together as you have your regular liberty meetings. Now, these people will be drawn into National Liberty Alliance for the sole purpose, usually, of really organizing, learning how to do the Committee of Safety. They'll also have the opportunity to take on the civics course and also our constitutional course. And as time goes on, they'll start to learn what we're doing with the grand jury. And maybe some of them will be able to become administrators. They'll have that desire. And they'll discover that, really, it's not all that difficult because people run away when they hear about the courts, when they hear about law. But look at these Committee of Safeties. They can get together and discuss what's going on. They can focus in. First order of business seems to be suggested to them. Go for Agenda 21. Okay? And so they have their meetings. They discover where the problematic groups are, the towns, the villages, or maybe the county legislators, or someone, anybody that they discover. This is the problem. This is the core. These are the people. Okay, that are bringing this this Agenda 21 to us, which is a total violation of everything that we have as America. And so you can have resolutions, you can make resolutions, you can have a seal, you can create a letterhead, and you can act with authority. You can make a resolution and write it up and send it to them and then go down and hand deliver it. Once you mail it to them, let them know we're coming down to hand deliver this to you at your next legislative meeting or your next town board meeting. And you go in force. And you demand for them to listen and demand for them to stop breaking the law and let them know we're taking this to the grand jury if you don't cease and desist. I mean, this is the power of the people. This is what they will understand. They will have power. They will be able to have authority. And they probably won't even have to push it that far because once they show up with force, this is the people speaking and they're talking with authority with the Committee of Safety. It has a history. And you come with the sealed paper, okay? A lot of this, it means a lot. And that in itself could be enough power to put out the Agenda 21. And they can move to the next thing, and the next thing, and the next thing. And this is what we, the people, need to be doing. While we continue to work to get into the courts, look at 2016, on January 4th, 2016, was our first meeting. And we declared that this is the year of justice. And that's what we intend to do. This is the year we're going to get into the courts. I could feel it in my bones. I believe it. But it's the people that has to do it. You know, National Liberty Alliance is a facilitator. We, the people, stood up and came together as a unified United States common law grand jury after we went across the entire nation into every single state and initiated in every single county. And it came together as unified states. All the counties became unified state. And then all the states became unified states to become the unified United States common law grand jury. That's power. That's authority. That's we the people. And we're coming in with force and with the people from every state of the union. We're not just a couple of people in New York or Jersey or California or Texas. We are the people of every single state of the union, and we speak with that power and that authority. And a lot of them do quiver. They do shake. They do run off the bench. We've heard of it. We've even had some of these things taped where the judge couldn't even speak. He couldn't get out of the room quick enough. And they pulled themselves off the case. So, look it. This is what we have to do. And we're going to use the Committee of Safety to pull in the liberty groups because they understand this. And we will start to fortify ourselves in every county. And when they come to understand the power of the people through the grand jury and the positions open as administrators in every county within the United States, that's when we're going to really stand up. And that's when we're really going to take control. And it could happen very quickly. It could happen literally within a month or two. It's all up to every person who's hearing this message to get it to the people who aren't hearing these messages, to get out to the liberty groups in your state, in your counties, and get the ball rolling. We're putting together, as we speak, a PowerPoint for this purpose. And then we'll also put PowerPoints for that. We've already got some, but we'll clean them up and do something more today because we've accomplished so much more that we need to put into these things. We'll put something together again for the grand jury. But let's get going. We're putting a PowerPoint together for the sheriff. We're also getting ready to meet with sheriffs and start talking with them. We're starting to push them towards going forward with enforcement. They have to get a step up. It's up to them to save this nation. If they refuse to step up, we're going to let them know if we fall as a nation, if we go down and we have to fight in the streets, just remember, when you're beside us fighting in the streets, it's because you didn't do your job now, today. This is the time. All right, with that, we're going to go to the open forum. Gerard, you ready to take that over?
Sure.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, we got New York Mike. You're unmuted.
Hi, how are you?
Good, good. Good to have
you. Well, I finally got a conversation with my sheriff today. Are you ready?
Yeah.
It was a short 2 minutes. It took me a month to get one. I first started with my case in question and told him my vehicle was absconded illegally and was there anything he would like to do to help me to retrieve it? And he said that he did not have the authority or the power to. And I reminded him of him being a constitutional sheriff, and you have the ultimate power in our county. And I stumped him there for a minute, and he said, well, if you have any issues with something going wrong, he directed me to the district attorney. I go, oh, well, then, by the way, I'd like to take the conversation to your informational package that you received from National Liberty Alliance. I'm also a member and county organizer and would like to know how you feel. Did you indulge in that information? And he said, yes, I received that information. I'm not interested. And well, that was when he kind of dumbfounded me. I said, excuse me, let me get this straight. You're not interested in acting constitutionally? Is that what you just said to me? And then he said, my career has taken me in a different direction. He basically said that he is for and respectably with the people that back him. And that certainly wasn't we the people, obviously. And I asked if I could have a conversation with him.
By the way, Mike, what county was this in?
Schuyler, William Yesman.
Wow, Schuyler. Okay.
Schuyler County, William Yesman.
Mm-hmm.
They right off the first thing he said was, "I'm not interested." It baffled me. It shocked me.
Well, you know, look at these sheriffs at some point in time, look, you know, what's going on out west is a huge thing. And we're getting word that the sheriffs are ready out there. They've seen the disgust by the federal government, that they're so tired of it. They're watching the people suffer, the farmers, I mean, well, the ranchers particularly, I mean, and even the miners and the loggers. But the people are being abused out there. They're seeing it, and they know it's illegal, and they're tired of it, and they're waiting. And I believe they're waiting for us at this point. So they may be primed to do it. Once it happens out west, it's going to move this way. And those sheriffs that are acting the way that sheriff did, and we've heard a few bad stories this week, and we're going to go after some of these sheriffs this week. Well, hopefully within the next few weeks, you know, we have to get the things together, affidavits and paperwork and stuff. But look at these sheriffs are going to end up with these crooked judges. They're going to end up behind bars. I mean, look at this is the only place for them. They'll have the opportunity. They will have the opportunity to take hold of the olive branch and to receive mercy and actual just forgiveness. We'll just move on. Just let's get in, you know, rank and order here and let's take back our nation. Let's bring it back to law and order. But the day comes when their arrest warrant goes out, when their indictment goes out, that's the moment in time. It's too late. You're going to face the jury, and the jury will decide your fate. And we're going to put the charges up, which ultimately is subversion against the United States of America. It's not that they're ignorant to it anymore. We've given them the words. We wrote the papers. We've sent them the papers. And it's not one paper. It's not two paper. It's not 10 paper. It's not a dozen paper. It's 30, 40, 50, 60 papers we have sent to the sheriffs. They cannot claim ignorance. They cannot claim that they didn't know what was going on. They can't claim that they didn't understand. They can claim that they didn't read it. Oh, well. Oh, well. You know, you're the constitutional sheriff. How many people got to knock on your door and ask you, what are you going to do? Have you read the papers? Are you going to protect the people here in this county? Are you going to protect me? Are you going to protect me from these out-of-control police forces? And it's not your job? And, then, you know, look, they're going to have to answer. They will answer one day. I truly believe in my heart we're going to be successful. And the time is short. I believe that, too. I could see it. It's coming.
I certainly hope so. My only question to put it in a question is, what do I do? He asked me, actually, what entity took my Jeep. I told him it was the village of Watkins Glen, Officer Marmer. I gave him all the details necessary, and he basically threw it back in my face. There's nothing I can do. I don't have the authority. And then I threw it back in his face.
You got to bear in mind on some of these issues they really don't understand, but the bigger issues they should understand, because we're talking about saving America. We're talking about corruption. You know, we've sent them the papers on different things, and they need to understand it. But what are you to do with it? You know what? I think what it is someone needs to run for sheriff in that county. That's what I think. And they need to run on the Constitution. They need to run on common law and the Constitution, for the Constitution is a common law document by we the people. And,
they may want to organize a picket.
Well, you got to run for sheriff there. Are you interested in running for sheriff? Do you know someone else that might run for sheriff that we could talk to?
I would love to run for sheriff, but you got me labeled as a felon.
Huh?
I would love to run for sheriff. I think I would get voted in, to be honest with you. People know who I am, but they got me labeled as a felon. How would that work?
Yeah, that's a lot of people are labeled that way. That's true. That is an uphill battle, and until we get to the other side, that's going to be a problem. You know, because really the people that are claimed to have been felons, of course, are not felons in most cases, because there is no injured party here. And this is just statutory courts, statutory laws. So many people I see go to jail, they get in there, they plead, they argue the case, they bring a jury, not a grand jury, but a puppet jury, maybe six people, not even a full jury. They don't even hide that. And there's never any grand jury indictment on most of these cases, and they go to jail for a year, and then now they can't get a weapon no more. They can't. There's a lot of things they can't do, and of course you can't become a sheriff. But we got to fix that when we get to the other side.
All that has happened to me over the course of 20 some years. Everything you just mentioned has happened to me, and yeah, this is me trying. You guys are fixing me up a habeas corpus. I'll be on tomorrow night as well, or tomorrow afternoon, rather. And I figure maybe after the habeas corpus is received by these people, it might be another opportunity to talk to the sheriff, maybe.
Yep, maybe. We'll see where we go. Well, look at the habeas corpus. We'll go to him, too, but go ahead.
Number one, if you're going to talk to your sheriff, like if you have a problem like your car, you should see him with that privately, and don't take it in the same venue as the common law grand jury, because as a common law grand jury, you're supposed to be unbiased. So you shouldn't be there, you know, doing your own thing and then throwing the common law at him. What I would do is, if I was speaking for the common law grand jury, I would take a group of people in. And he's not going to be so quick to deny the Constitution in front of a group of witnesses. And I mean, my goodness, my sheriff came in front of the Tea Party that had scoped their Oath Keepers. We had 200 people, and they held his feet to the fire. And so that's the kind of venue that you want to talk to the sheriff in. You want to talk to him, and then you can get talking about the Constitution and the common law grand jury, because look at you started off complaining about your car, so he said, "Oh, this is a disgruntled, you know, constituent." And you're absolutely right. The sheriffs really care about their constituents more than anybody else. If you don't live in his county, you don't vote in his county, he could care less about you, you know, unless you have some kind of influence in his county. So make no mistake about it. They're political animals, and you have to know that when you go in there to talk to them. They're forced to play politics whether they like it or not. So a political thing, you know, you'd bring four or five people in, you'd ask him about the paperwork, you'd have some stuff for him to look at, maybe one of our jurist handbooks, and I wouldn't get into it too thickly the first time. I would just introduce myself, put some stuff out there, reprint some of the papers that, like, my sheriff hasn't seen any of them probably, you know, somebody in the back room is taking them home for kindling or something. So I would do it like that. And the thing is then you ramp it up each time until you get to the point that you say, okay, now you've really shown your true colors. Now I know you're not under the Constitution. Now you're actually bordering on, you know, subversion of the Constitution. So now what you've done is you're warring on the people, and we need to get rid of you. You need to step down, and we're going to work the campaign to get you out of there. And if we find any illegal stuff you have done, we will work to make you step down in shame. So that's just a suggestion, because
yeah. One other thing I'd like to pop on that, but go ahead, finish that first.
No, that's it. I just basically you get the idea where I'm going with that.
Yeah, look, we develop committee of safety. You know, those committee of safety people should also stop becoming committeemen, because we're going to take the committeemen process back too. And when the committeemen process is taken back, remember what they can do is they can recall him. All the committeemen have to do is go out there, and they have to only get a certain amount of signed papers for a recall. You give a good reason to the people why you want to recall this sheriff. He's disobedient to the Constitution. Then you'll have to give, you know, certain incidences and ask the people to sign the papers. Once you get the papers signed for a recall, he's out of office. And within 90 days, they got to set up a new election. The other way to get rid of a sheriff, which will be coming soon, but we're going to be very slow in doing this because we want to give them plenty of time. When we finally come down on the sheriffs, they're going to know and understand they've had every opportunity. You know, we have bent over backwards to do everything for them. These are the guys we're expecting to save America, ultimately, prior to the next step, which is in the streets as the militia. Okay, but look, they got to do what they got to do. But the other way we can get rid of a sheriff is very, very, very easy. You know, you sign an affidavit concerning the fact that he has violated his oath of office, and you bear witness to that fact. And if the grand jury believes it, and you get an indictment, then that's it. He's out of office. He's no longer the sheriff. I mean, you know, maybe the undersheriff will take control while he's going to the court system, but I'm not sure of the process on that. But definitely he can't stay a sheriff no more until after the court case and he's found guilty, then he's done. But, you know, these things are going to play out as time goes on. And I think when they see what happens out west, and that starts to move across the nation, the sheriffs are going to wake up and they're going to realize. They're going to have to ask themselves and realize, okay, whose side am I on? Am I going to go on this side or am I going to go on that side? And I believe most of the sheriffs are going to make the right decision at that point. Even these evil guys, because that's what they are. They're evil. They're just politicians. They're people taking advantage of the situation. It's a job for them, and they don't care about you, and they don't care about me.
Yeah, he
but we need statesmen is what we need.
He shocked me with I've called so many times I didn't actually expect to talk to him today. So when I did get a chance to talk to him, I tripped over my thoughts. And you guys are right, I should have.
Well, yeah, you shouldn't have brought the car thing up. George, right on that. That you got to go in there and let's talk to him about the events at hand, the bigger events. Are you going to help to protect the nation? Are you going to protect the people? Are you going to stand up at the right time? Are you going to obey the law? You know, this is where we have to go. You know, you bring the papers that he should have copies of every paper we've ever written. I know we send it to him, but some of these sheriffs we may have the wrong fax number or something. You know, there are some that didn't get it. I don't think there are many, but there are some. But you should take a copy of every paper we wrote and put it in a book form. Or staple each one of them together and give them a copy. And also all the papers we've written directly to the sheriffs, give them a copy. And ask them, you must have seen these things, you must have read them, you do realize there's a problem in this nation, you do realize, I'm sure, we're about ready to have an economic collapse, we're about ready to have a monetary collapse. You know, what are you going to do when that happens? You're going to allow FEMA to come in here? You're going to allow Homeland Security? You're going to allow the militarization of America in your county? Is that what you're going to do? Or are you going to pull the people together and protect your borders? You know, These are the things they need to start thinking about. And we write about these things in our papers. They've got it. They've been given the orders.
I'll need to put together that information that you've sent to sheriffs so I'm better informed and armed when I have the next conversation, because it will be me that has the conversation with him again. There's nobody else locally taking any action.
Well, you got to get other people to come with you. You should have 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 more people or whatever. And you know what? This is why we're pulling the people together. Come on Thursday. Let's get united across the nation, and the people on the grassroots level, you guys need to be doing what you need to do. And if you have 20 people come together in a county, or 10 people, and you got the county next door, you got 20 people or 10 people coming together there. Hey, county next door, we're going to see our sheriff today. You want to come and kind of get behind us with this? Sure, I'll come. Now you got 30 people, okay? And we'll go to your county when you're ready to go see your sheriff. You lead the game. We'll be right behind you as a force of people. And when you go to his office with 20, 30 people, where they got to move the meeting out of that office into a larger, room, okay? It's gonna mean something to this guy. He's gonna realize something's up. And we want your time, Sheriff. We got a lot to discuss, and if we can't finish this today, you know, we could pick up on this next week or another day or whatever, but look, we need to know what you're going to do. We need what you're going to do now.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Okay. Gerard? Unmute yourself.
I'm sorry, I was muted. I was talking to myself again.
Yeah. No.
Must be getting senile. The other thing I was going to say, and I don't want to belabor the point, we get to the next question here. Look, if you can't find anybody, when we were constituting the counties, we went on meetup, we looked for liberty groups in the area, and we went over there and we went to their meetings when they had them. And the other thing you could do is just go to the court. Go to the court on Wednesdays, Thursdays, Friday nights, whenever they have court, and stand in the back of the court, all the people that are getting the screws put to them, and hand them a card and tell them to call and make a meeting, put a date on it. I'll tell you what, you'll get some motivated people right out of the back of the court, the people that they're sucking off of and that they're violating. They're very motivated, and that'll snowball in itself. So look, I just want people to start thinking outside of the box, you know.
That's a very good idea.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay. I'm going to move to the next question here.
Yep.
Okay, we have Pennsylvania Mayor. You've been unmuted. Nice to have you here tonight. What's going on? I guess I didn't wake her up. Pennsylvania Mary, I know you're there.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can now.
Thank you. I must have been muted and didn't get it unmuted. How are you all doing?
Good, good.
Great. Okay, I actually just shot this over to John, but to build on what you had said with what people need to do and bringing John's little aspect, this Thursday, if I may, is National Prayer Day. There are events around the country. I had gotten a little something sent to me, and I looked it up, and my little borough is having what they're calling a prayer service at our flag, I guess when they raise the flag at 7 o'clock in the morning on Thursday. There are other things that are scheduled maybe at noontime. So people around the country need to take a look and see. Scientifically, it's been proven that when there's a positive declaration and then prayer, that energy actually has a greater force. And it changes the outcome of things. So if there isn't going to be any kind of an event, since John was talking about people coming Thursday night, I'm going to suggest and ask that maybe a 2 minutes be planned to declare what we want of our higher power of God, of what we're asking of the universe, and do a group prayer to open the meeting on Thursday night. So that's all I wanted. I appreciate you taking my call, and enjoy it. I know that there's really some neat things planned that I had looked into as to what was scheduled. I just don't know what else is anywhere. So, but there are things that are scheduled all different times of the day, Thursday. So thank you. Appreciate it. Hello?
Yeah, Gerard, do you get your mic off again?
Hello?
Hello, can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Okay.
Were you able to hear me?
Well, yeah, I thought Gerard was picking up on it, but maybe he's got his mic muted again. We appreciate that, and that's a good idea. People should get together, you know, and take advantage of the National Prayer Day and do what they can. I was just looking as you were talking. I just put in one of the closest cities to me. It's a small B city, Poughkeepsie, New York, to see if there was any kind of an activity or a collection, and I haven't been able to find anything. I'm going to try Kingston and Newburgh because it'd be interesting to go and meet with a group of people and get together.
Excuse me for interrupting. There's a website that you can go to, I think if you Google, that has different events listed. They want you to put in your zip code and then within how many miles. There's a little drop down for you to do it. So it's really easy and very quick.
Do you know the website or an idea?
I'm actually looking for it right at the moment, John. Yeah, I just put it into Google, National Day of Prayer, May 5th, and pulled up numerous.
All right, people might want to do that. And you know, maybe we can have the opportunity to speak with people there and share with them something they can do. I mean, look, at what we're doing is a godly thing. We're bringing the king back into the court. I mean, that's our focus. And it would be very appropriate to bring that message to the people. Why don't you come to get to work together with us to bring God back into our courts? Because if we can get the king back into the court and have justice in the courts again, built upon his principles, we can then have a country under control. Again, you know?
And you're absolutely right. People are missing such basic things because we really all, everyone alive, has been so conditioned to believe what they believe, to do what they do. And I'm getting a little bit of information. There are some people who are awakening that had no idea. They have been doing what they've been conditioned to do. They've gone along with, but they had no idea that they have been sucked into criminal activity. And these are some of our leaders, and they're in tremendous fear. So the courts and the legal system is tied into the bankers, and they're all tied into the crown. And that is who is controlling the world. Everybody else is following suit. The American Bar Association is part of that. So they're renegade, and they're fighting for their lives. The rest of them, and they're members of the bar who really don't know. They knew that they were sucked in, and this is the way it is, and I have to pledge this oath, but they really didn't know what that entailed. And some of the younger ones are now finding out, and they're horrified. So, I mean, this is really unraveling in so many different directions.
Right.
With so many things.
I would like to say is, you know, I agree with everything you're saying, and sometimes it's difficult for some of the people to really grab a hold of some of these things, depending on where they are in their understanding of what's really going on here. But, you know, again, getting back to the fact that the country is a mess, everybody realizes that. Government lies to us over and over again, I mean, everybody agrees upon that.
John, excuse me for interrupting. I'm going to tell you honestly where I live, and I'm outside of Philadelphia. Even my own family members, they are in total denial.
Right, exactly.
Everything is still, are you kidding? Look at the market. The market's doing great. They really are in total denial. I've got some up near New York. So
well, I understand that.
There's a really good job, and it's deliberate because there's still a lot of money being generated from this part of the country. So this aspect of the country is being treated very differently than the Midwest and the West. And there are different agendas for each one of those sections.
Well, you're absolutely right. But look, I don't know what percentages of the people understand, what percentages of the people that are just so naive, and what percentages of the people that just are starting to wake up, and what percentages of the people, are waking up to the point when they're starting to understand who the enemy really is. And it's hard for people sometimes that when they come to understand that certain organizations that they may belong to, even religious organizations or however you want to, churches or whatever, and they discover that they're part of the problem. It's very difficult for them to get their head around that and so on. But the message we have focuses, and we always stay back onto the point, and that's the key here. We got a mess, and the mess is that these people are not obeying the law. I don't care who you talk to anyway. Everybody will agree with this. Politicians are nothing but liars. They say all this stuff, but they do nothing. They don't obey the Constitution. They don't obey the law. They do what they please. They make up laws that are unconstitutional. They should be then they are null and void, ultimately. And so what can you do about it? Well, look at if we can bring the king back into the court, if we can we the people can take back the courts and then require them to obey the law. It's that simple. All problems are solved. And all the people responsible at some point in time will be held accountable just by applying the law. We don't have to go out looking for them. We don't have to do any, because it'll all come to us. You got the Alex Joneses out there, so to speak, that have accumulated so much information against so many different people. They got so much evidence. And when they understand that they can come finally to a grand jury and put their evidence forward and it can be acted upon, now, again, we don't have to go out there looking for nothing. We just need to apply the law on every case that comes our way and work the courts in every county across America and just do the right thing. And in no time, these people will be running for the hills, hiding under rocks, or crawling into dark corners, leaving the country, whatever it is, that's fine, c'est la vie, goodbye, we'll get you later, because eventually the whole world's going to turn on them, because this is a worldwide problem. And America.
Oh, yeah, and that's what's happening, John. You're right. It is, the rest of the world is awakening.
Think a lot of them have been woken up long before we have been.
Oh, they did. They're wondering why we're taking so long. And if I can shift gears just for a quick second, and then I'll get off. I watched a documentary of, and this is about the power of prayer and that positive energy. I don't know how else to say it, so I'm just using that terminology. There was a documentary of a woman who had a brain tumor, and it was virtually inoperable. And they had tried pretty much of everything, and it was the base of her skull. It was at the back of the brainstem. And they brought her into the OR, and they put up the films from an MRI, which are they give a very different slices. And then they had another technology where you could visibly watch and see her brain interactively. They brought in seven, I'm going to call them like monks, the high spiritual groups, and they stood around the head of this bed, and they mentally visualized. They could see on the X-ray screen the tumor, and they stood there and mentally visualized and manifested and declared that this tumor be dissolved. And over a 7-minute time span, they showed you what their mental capacity, what our true abilities are. They dissolved that tumor. So that is technology that is now being implemented in, just as sound waves are, there are electromagnetic wave healing centers. There was one that just opened in Virginia. So this alternative stuff that you're hearing, this isn't new age. This is old age that's being brought back in, that's true and works, that they took away from us.
Right.
So
yeah,
the power
we're becoming familiar
the power
with different we are becoming familiar with different things, you know.
I do realize this.
Yeah.
I guess I was just trying to reinforce this stuff really does work.
Well, on the quantum level, I know that they're working is sort of homeopathic medicine, which they work with, which has something to do with vibrations, but they're working on those kind of things on the quantum level. We know that there's a connection there and that a lot of things could be done. And, you know, I don't know about stories of the type you're talking to me about. I've heard lots of stories, but I myself have never seen
anything. Well, I don't do hearsay. Mm-hmm. I do first person. Like the movie
I'd be secondhand here, though.
Okay,
so
can't the movie,
really comment on those things.
The movie Vaxxed, they talk about Dr. Wakefield, but the first person that came forward from the CDC was Dr. William Thompson, a PhD. He was a co-author of the DiStefano Report. I didn't just believe it when it became public. There was a public statement made by an attorney group. I called the attorney group and discussed something differently, never brought him up. She then said to me, "Did you see the public statement that was made?" I said, "That's how I found you. You're talking about Dr. Thompson." And she said, "Yes." And I said, "Then you are representing him." And she said, "Yes, we are."
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Well, please tell him." I said, "Thank you so very much for his courage."
All right. Well, anyway,
so
I don't know that we want to get too much. Excuse me, Mary. I don't know that we want to get too much into kind of bringing this kind of stuff forward. And I know, look, people have faith in different things, and a lot of
things. It's time to wake up, John. I'm sorry. It is time to wake up,
Mary. You're missing.
I'm not going to pussyfoot around.
I understand that, but you know, again, I don't think it's an appropriate conversation here to get too deep into those stories. I do agree on the quantum level, kind of a lot of things are taking place, and maybe there's something with that. I've been hearing about these kind of things for a long time. I didn't understand them, but when I started to look into some of the things and looking into the science, I started to realize that there may be something here. And the more and more you look into it, you start to realize, hey, you know, there's a good chance that there is something there. Now, I haven't experienced any of these things yet, but there's a lot of other things, of course, you know, that people just natural substances and different vitamins and different things you could take that you people become healed of things that you know that they can't get healed from the regular medical community.
That's what I put together for you last fall.
There's a whole bunch of stuff going on, and everything deserves investigation. If you have a particular problem or a situation, people should investigate everything, but they got to be very careful of charlatans. They got to be very careful of exaggeration.
So true.
They just got to
be
careful because they're going to be suckered and waste their time in places. But look, I think there's enough out there that you can find some really rock-solid people. And again, you go into the homeopathic place areas, and you will find, in England particularly, they have an association. They kind of killed everything here in America. But in England, they have an association, and you can get a lot of stuff out there. And you can find some stuff that is really rock-solid stuff and amazing stuff. And then you can research what's available here in America for you. So... But I don't want to get too
without
much.
Without a doubt. Yeah, no, that's and that's fine. I was just trying to bring in having watched that documentary, I visually watched the power of mental energy. And to conclude this, yes, you are right. Everything is energy, frequency, vibration.
Well, God
everything.
Spoke everything into creation. That tells
us
something.
That's correct. Exactly. And Einstein declared this over 100 years ago. So I'm not saying I haven't had a revelation or that I can't take credit for any of this other than just to reinforce, yes, and you are on the right track.
He called the quantum stuff, he called it spooky science.
John,
because
this is,
strange things were happening that couldn't be explained, you know?
And I can't explain things, and I know that I've said things such as, I know things and I don't know why. I'm understanding why. Mm. And before I ever came and met any of you, this is all of the stuff that I didn't buy into. I went through my couple years of rage and total hibernation. I'm now at the state of frustration because I see things and I know things, and it's things that I researched. Like alternative, I've been into for 28 years.
Right.
So to me, it's almost like I don't see the other stuff anymore. And I get frustrated when it's like, how could somebody not see this? Mm-hmm. How can they not know this? And, gee, why don't they trust me? Well, I've trusted everybody, and I've been burnt from one end of Coyote to the other.
Well, so have we all. So,
I hear you. So,
you know, talking about being burnt, I do want to talk about something as soon as we finish our conversation. And, you know, it is time to move on. Do you have a final comment?
I just wanted to say thank you all so very much. I really do appreciate it.
Right.
And, yes, I burnt my hands horribly. I don't feel. My fingers don't feel.
Physically been burnt. Oh, okay.
Yes. I didn't. I don't. My hands don't feel. They don't work.
Mm-hmm.
And I, not knowing it, picked up and carried a hot griddle, and it burnt me. I ended up with second and third degree burns.
Wow.
On all of my digits. So if Jan's listening, that's why there was no response yet. I'm healed pretty good, though. I used some of the silver iodine, or the ion.
Oh, that's great, yeah.
I sprayed some of the silver ion.
Yes,
so.
You keep that on. You're amazing things, I tell you. I've seen some amazing pictures of people that serious burns, just like you're saying, and amazing that the scars, everything disappeared. It's just totally amazing.
Well, yes, I worked at Crozier Chester with the burn center. I worked in the burn OR, and we used the silver iodine. I'm going back to 1980.
Mm-hmm.
We applied that on burnt tissue while people were under after we had debrided. That was the course of treatment.
Mm-hmm.
So this isn't something it goes in cycles, and it's now been being reinforced again.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway,
right, well,
thanks. I appreciate it. Good night.
Thank
God
you,
bless
buddy.
All.
Okay.
Yeah, if you're able to do something for Thursday, it's just if you're going to have a group together, just declare we want world peace. We want to take back our courts. We want God back in our system. Whatever you
right.
want to do. And then, the Lord's Prayer, whatever. A minute of meditation and let everyone pray to whoever they're, if they don't pray to God, then whomever their higher power is. God is mine. Thank you and good night.
Thank
all.
You,
love you.
Right.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, before we take our next caller here, just something, something I wanted to bring it up a little earlier. Look at, there's a lot of focus on us as a national group. What's very strange is one of the very, very few, and I don't know if there's any out there that isn't on this list, there's a terrorist list, and it seems that every liberty group seems to be on it, everyone. It's kind of strange National Liberty Alliance hasn't been put onto that, we can get a couple ideas on why that is. But nevertheless, okay, we have had some people. We can go back to Stephen Dean. He was a state coordinator and working in his county down out there in Utah, and they set him up. They spent a lot of time with him, trying to get a gun in his hands, and they finally did. And he had had a felon at an earlier time in his life, so they tried to put him in jail. And a lot of people, they kind of know that story. I don't want to go through the story. We know of another person in Massachusetts was set up, and he went to buy some, dummy hand grenades, and they weren't real hand grenades. And the people selling it to him, they kept wooing him and wooing him, and eventually he thought, hey, pretty cool to have some dummy hand grenades. And then they arrested him. They were FBI agents. Claiming that they were trying to sell him real hand grenades. I mean, that whole thing is against the law to begin with. It's called entrapment. I mean, they're going out enticing people to break the law. That in itself is enticement. The point is this, okay? Anybody gets a phone call, anybody who wants to sell you something, be very, very careful. All of us need to be very careful that we don't walk into some kind of a setup. Wise as serpents and gentle as doves, I think it is. Just be careful. Don't get burnt. Don't get involved. Don't go off with people you don't know. And be careful of people all of a sudden that are new around you and they all of a sudden want to pal around with you and keep talking about different things. And, we see a lot of agitators. When we're out, I wasn't personally out in Oregon, but, Gerard was out there. There were agitators out there. There were agitators out at the Bundy Ranch. There are agitators everywhere trying to start trouble, trying to get people to do stupid things, trying to get people to do illegal things. Just be careful and just stay away from it. Stay focused, stay on what we're doing, and let's just keep going forward to bring the law back in. Stay principled. It's that simple. And, you know, if you make the right decision every moment of the day and you stay principled, you'll be in good shape. Okay, Gerard, you back yet? Did you find your way back on?
Yeah, I'm here. Yep.
Okay, right. We have Jeremiah of California. Okay. His mic is open.
Hey.
You got the mic?
Hey, Jeremiah.
I'm not going to shout. I'm going to try not to shout tonight.
Okay, no shouting from Jeremiah.
I heard that how are you guys doing tonight?
Good.
Hopefully.
Good.
Well, I want to say, I'm just going to do a quick quote from the Foundations of the Common Law, the book I'm reading right now, and it's about the IR system, which was a circuit of judges that would basically take around this entire system of law with them. As it was basically a royal power coming to town, and this was in the early days of the common law, but. The quote is as follows: "And the sheriff surrendered to the justices his wand of office and received it back at their hands." See, they were the king, and he was to act at their command and to hold office at their will. I believe that that is the authority of the common law grand jury, which is the people in this country, because the people are the sovereign king in this country. So if the sheriff isn't acting, that's where the common law grand jury actually can have the fullest effect. Also, the other thing I thought of was the coroner is a constitutional figure, which if the sheriff doesn't want to respond and make arrests or even try to act as a go-between, you know, to do negotiations in an administrative way with civil bodies, then the coroner would also be, I think, someone to turn to. Rob Ryder's got some good videos out about that. This other thing is about the California grand jury. A quick excerpt from Citizenship and Grand Juries in California here. The grand jury, the California grand jury of today is not, however, a common law body and may exercise only the investigating and reporting powers the legislature has granted it. And that just literally did take me back when I read that, you know, for the first time, because of the fact that, well, I honestly thought that a civil authority was a common law authority, considering the fact that the Constitution references common law and at the same time is thought of as a civil institution. So what's there is a blending and a merging between the civil and the common law, but I think that we on this call probably can sift through the mire and find the truth. But California is actually not one of the original states in the Union, and so its system is a little different, and there are other states that are like that. Okay, because of the specific request to come in, I do have a question, though. I mean, I'm getting there. It's just a nice huge buildup. Do you want to respond before I ask my question?
Well, I do have a response, but to them saying it's not a common law body, and we understand why they would say such a thing. And we have run into it ourselves, even here in New York, when they say the common law has been abrogated because they're taking something out of context in the Constitution. You know, when it talks about the common law being brought forward, and it said the legislator has the power from time to time in that body of law that's being brought forward to change it and to make it conform. But what they were talking about that portion of the common law that people had already entered into contracts when the Constitution was ratified, that the legislator had the power to change that law in order to make it fit into the Constitution, because some of the common law stuff that went on was not really constitutional. And so then they misquote that in order to give them the legislator the power to basically change the Constitution, which is a lie. And we know that can't happen. And then they quote a court case where the judges further, you know, put that in, and we looked at it, and there was five justices or seven justices, and three of them said that it's unconstitutional if you uphold this, and the four went with Hughes. It was Hughes versus something, and we wrote back and we said, look at those three judges that said this is unconstitutional. We're the people. We're the grand jury. We agree with them. The other ones are unconstitutional, and so are you. And the people have spoken. They never answered us. So that's your answer there. That they're doing all kinds of, you know, stuff that's not within the Constitution, and they're representing
right
as a
makes
power
sense
of the legislator. Look at this government never left the legislators power to legislate away the Constitution. Just remember that.
Right. Well, you know, I get that. And, well, one specific clause in California's act to be admitted into the union is that the people of this state will not make any claims to public lands. So that's just a point of reference for people there, a promise by the people to not make a claim on public land in order to be admitted into the union. So some food for thought. But I spoke to a judge today, this prospective judge. He's running for office. His name is Victor Huang. He was a former civil rights attorney, a former prosecutor, and he was just petitioned. He was, you know, out there picketing, passing out flyers. And I asked him about the civil grand jury, because I was curious to find out if it had any common law function. And what he told me was that, because I approached the issue from the administrative standpoint, because I approached it from the administrative standpoint, I asked him if the civil grand jury was really more of an administrative grand jury, or could the people start some sort of committee or administrative grand jury. I stayed away from the word common law, right? And I did throw it out there briefly, but what he told me was that right now the city has a proposal to actually create a body that is designated specifically for the tasks of what would be a common law grand jury. But what they're trying to do is set it up on the civic side of things, so that way there's already something established.
Yeah, it's already statutory, then, it seems.
Yeah.
And again,
yeah, so
administrative does not bring you to common law, so that's the key here.
I thought that was kind of curious, though, because they were... Well, let me ask you this. Here's the question, Gerard.
There is, I think, I'm not sure where it's at. It may be in Los Angeles. I think it's in some city out in California. I saw something on TV, like a 2020 type thing, talking about this actual grand jury of these people that have come together. And they seem to be doing something different than everyone else is. But when you boil it down and you really pay attention to what's going on, the whole thing is still run by lawyers. Okay, and the last thing in the world we need is lawyers running grand juries. I mean, look, we need people running grand juries. It's
right.
That simple.
And the people who understand the people.
So, but yeah, not
sorry. Okay. Well, I wanted to. What you said about lawyers was important, because in the IR system, from what I've read here, they had these IR roles. Okay, and so. They were basically entries of proceeds in these pipe rolls, great central accounts, right? So, let's see, 12th century, right? We're talking 12th century. We have records made for the commissioners themselves, so eye rolls, and for some 14th century IRs. These are supplemented by yearbook reports made for the technical purposes of lawyers. So what I got out of that was that the records themselves were made for the lawyers, not necessarily for the people, you know, or the subjects of the parties of the case.
Right, and that works well in contract law. You know, when you're arguing in equity, and you do have a judge, and you have the lawyers make any argument, and it does kind of make some sense to like we have American jurisprudence. You know, these judges are not supposed to be making their own opinions up on the bench. They're supposed to follow the law, and the law of the land is clearly laid out, and they can follow a lot of this through American jurisprudence.
Let me ask you this. I want to ask you something, John.
Of course, they bastardized American jurisprudence, by the way. I mean, they put all these different volumes of laws and brought us into statutory and administrative stuff all over the place. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, let me ask you. This is on topic because I'm glad I really like going back and forth with you. It's a healthy debate, I feel. But in American system of government, I want to ask you, what is the American system of government? Okay, is it do we have an English system, or do we have and if we do have an American system distinct from English, what is the defining, what's going to stand out as
well,
being specifically
I'm not sure
American?
How you mean American, I'm not sure how you mean this, but it's pretty clear. We have a constitution, and the constitution lays out the three bodies or the three branches of government, what their powers are. And each state is copied in the same way. They have a constitution, and the constitution lays out the powers and between the three branches of government. And legislators can't go outside that which they're given authority to legislate.
But wouldn't you agree that the founding fathers of, let's just say, my local city and county charter, whoever wrote the charter, those are the founding fathers.
Well, now you're moving into a charter.
Give me a sec. The reason why I'm doing that is because when you say constitution, it's really vague, and it doesn't apply in some states to people. And if people really want to take responsibility for their communities, a healthy look at the local government is in order for everyone on the call.
Right, but once you move into charters, you're talking about corporations.
Listen, when you look at
okay.
local government, you have to hold its feet to the fire of the state constitution.
And they have the same structure, by the way. They have the same structure as any other state.
That's right, and that's what Bob Schultz has won his cases on. Because the local governments are going out, floating bonds, moving money, and they're violating the state constitution that was put in place with all those protections for the people. And what they're doing is they're giving you taxation without representation. So ultimately, they need to follow that state constitution,
all
which
right.
has already been vetted against the federal. So it's a
the
good
defining.
System.
The defining characteristic between American law and English law is the fact that the people are the sovereign in this country. That's hands down
absolutely,
the defining
absolutely
characteristic.
Right.
So we can settle that we agree to that at least, and that certainly the sheriff, right, if he on the local level is to represent the people, then we as the sovereign, as the people, can force them to resign if they're not willing to intervene, intercede. I don't know.
Well,
how do you go about that?
It's called recall. And the people could do it without the committeeman. Look at it, if you got the committeeman process in place, and so you got a communicational thing going on, okay, and when people realize, okay, hey, look, if you got a problem politically, one of the first places you might want to go is see your committeeman, okay, and talk with them. Because they've got a tie-in to these people that have been elected in your particular election district. You know, he was partakers or part, well, he was part of the election process by bringing the papers or walking the papers for these people, and they're supposed to be statesmen. So the committeemen can come together and go to this particular politician who's now a servant and say, hey, look, what the hell are you doing here? You know, we're getting complaints about this, that, or the other thing, and they can fix that problem. And that's another venue or way to deal. And that ties in with the sheriff also, okay? And so that's one way of dealing with the problem. The problem is that's been high. That whole system's been hijacked also, and there is no power there anymore. But
do
we
you agree then?
And we intend on bringing it back.
Okay, you have a great idea.
We have a plan to bring that back.
No, it's awesome. But do you agree also with this judge that I spoke to who mentioned this other body that the city was setting up to deal with oversight? Because my question really for you is, how do you feel about administrative grand juries? Because do you know the difference? What's the difference between an administrative grand jury and a common law grand jury?
If you're going to go to an administrative grand jury, I would perceive at some point in time those people are paid to begin with because they're administrators. That's number one. And I don't know. It depends on the structure. Number two, it sounds like something that's going to be for a while. Look, you can't pull together a grand jury and have a sitting grand jury for 10 years. You know, these juries have to be turned over. My suspicion or suspicion is what I would suspect would be the way, depending on where this is happening. First of all, you can't put upon people that they have to take away from their life for some period of time and not be able to, you know, earn the monies they need to earn and take care of their family and so on and so forth, and put them on a grand jury and they're busy for 30 days straight, and maybe they have businesses to attend to. And you don't have the opportunity to get the entrepreneurs online either if you take that much time from them. But, I mean, just as a standard, I would presume a small, sleepy town or something like that, you might have a grand jury comes together for a month, okay? And so that grand jury might actually come together maybe once a week for that month. So they'll come together for 4 days. It's a presumption of how I think things might run. Right. We're going to find out how they run once we get in. But no, let me just finish my point. So you can bring a grand jury together and say, okay, you're going to be the grand jury for the next 30 days, and you're going to handle any case that comes through this county. And we're going to, on Thursdays, we're going to pull all the cases in. That's when you're going to come in and listen to these cases. And then the following Thursday. So the people only have 4 or 5 days out of the month, and that's acceptable. And the next month, you need a whole new group of people coming in, because it's a wrongdoing to put the power, that kind of power, into a group of people. And first of all, it's going to go to their head. You got to pay them a salary or something. They are getting paid something. Clearly, they're not getting paid enough from what they would have been making, at least not today, from what they would have been making working their own jobs or their own businesses. That's another thing. So you probably have people who are really, you know, not working anyway. I have no idea what's going on in the courts. Nobody does. Nobody knows. I've heard of grand juries that are sitting for 2-3 years, and then you got the same. We heard of grand juries actually sitting for 10 years already with the same foreman, and the foreman was a lawyer. Okay? So go figure that out. And they're getting away with it. No, administrative juries is not what the answer is. It is the people. The people need to be pulled together. You take New York City, okay? Let's say you're pulled in as a grand jurist in New York City, and I'm sure there's lots of grand juries operating at the same time. They got probably quite a few rooms in there down there. But nevertheless, okay, clearly you can't expect someone to come serve longer than a week if they're going to be serving every day for 5 days on a grand jury. You know, you have to pull a new grand jury in the next week to replace that grand jury. And I'm sure there may be 5 or 10 grand juries running at the same time. And as far as our system is set up, down in New York City in these counties, they're probably going to need a heck of a lot more than 4 administrators. The general rule is 4 administrators minimum for every county across America. But in these larger cities, they're going to need more. But, you know, look, it's got to be the people, pure and simple. Once you move away from the people, you got problems.
You know, John, this argument is really when we address the boards of review. Was the same thing where people were saying, don't do the grand jury, do the boards of review. Mm-hmm. And, you know, look, they have their place. You know, if you get an errant police department, that's one of the, they would put a citizen's board on a police department that was misbehaving. And, you know, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. It depends on how much politics there is in picking that board. But look, we got a good system with the grand jury. I don't want to beat this to death. We have a lot of people. We only got a few minutes. So I'd like to move on. I think we've made our point. Okay. Linda Hill. Linda, you've been unmuted.
I have to say, I just wanted to say thank you very much while you spoke tonight. I loved your presentation. I loved the people that were talking. And it is wonderful that we are now at the stage where the people can now take action and get out to their to their groups, to their prepper groups, to anyone that's aware and awake, and start, even with that small number, start putting things into motion. And if you were going to give one suggestion for the website that people should start in order to really get a baseline idea of these committees that we are to set up, the safety committees, would you point me to the Oregon website?
No, let me
outline?
Handle this. Yeah, let me respond
okay, thank
to
you.
This.
And
yeah.
That's it. That's
we are
question.
In
thank
a process.
You.
We are in a. We want to be very, very careful. Look, at when we brought together these things, we gathered information from websites, and then we started to find contradictions. And, you know, we had to go research a lot of the things that we've come to understand all on our own, and we had to correct a lot of errors that we had in our own minds and thinking as we were setting this thing up. So we've come to realize everything has to be really, scrutinized, and we have to approve it and agree that this is the facts, this is how it works, and this is how it should work. And we also have to bring and offer some tools to people and how they would operate. You know, how do you come together and form a meeting and choosing a chairman and what power and authority does a chairman have, which ultimately is none. The only thing he's keeping things in order is usually one of the most active people, so he's a good organizer usually, and he's just bringing things and moving things along. But he has no more power than anyone else. And if the group decides that the guy's a problem at any given point, they can say, "I move to remove the chairman. Let's take a vote." They should take a vote, and if it's more than 50%, he's gone, and you put in another one. So however that works,
great.
The point is you can't give a chairman the power that they seem to have everywhere. Forget that. That's insanity.
Right. Yeah.
We're, that's not what who we are, okay? But and we have to operate on principles. But what we're doing is we have accumulated a lot of knowledge from some websites. We're going through it now. We're creating a PowerPoint. We're preparing to put it all up on one of our pages. And if you want more information on this, you should come to the Thursday night meeting, which will be 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time in this room. And it'll be really a workshop type of thing, and we're really focusing in on organizing, and we're going to be discussing some of the things we're doing. We're not going to be ready with the page by that point in time. I hope that in the next week we will have a page up there where we'll have all the information necessary, and there'll be good, solid information that people can use and run with. And we will put it together in such a way as to direct and train people along a logical process of bringing this together and understanding it, and even to the point of how to write a resolution. People need, because you got to come to conclusions and write resolutions, and then you got to serve those resolutions upon the powers that you're going up against to say, you got to stop what you're doing. We, the people, have spoken, and we're not going to tolerate it no more. And if you're not going to obey and listen to us, we, the people here, through this body, which we have the power and the authority, and these kind of committees of safety has been operating since the 1600s. We had, I think it was John Hancock, ran a committee of safety in 1775 right up here in Albany, New York, because of the problems of the war and what was going on and everything, and they needed to do something to protect the people and to make sure they got a control over things. And in some places, I heard, as Brent was bringing, they got out of hand. But you know what? They're getting out of hand, or they get out of hand because they're led by people who can't even control themselves. And some of these people have charisma, and they have egos, and they have certain abilities, and the next thing you know, you're following the Pied Piper and you're doing stupid things. We are trying to take these committees of safety, and we'll give them all the tools, and we're going to give them the principles, and they can take the courses. We have a course here on the Constitution. We have a course here on civics. We also have a vow. We're going to suggest, hey, take the vow. That we can't force anyone to take a vow. We do it on membership, on a leadership role. They got to take a vow, and the vow to God is they promise to God, to the creator of the universe, to the governor of the universe, they take a vow to him that they will act in the sense of honor, justice, and mercy. And that's it. It's a very simple vow. And any of our leadership gets out of line, we remind each other of that. Wait a second, you took a vow. You know, you got to be honorable. You have to come with honor, and you have to come with justice. But anyway, we're going to try to instill this in people and pray and hope for the best. And then it's up to God to catch the hearts of these people. So you'll always have people who will do stupid things. But once people get educated and they understand the principles, you'll always have someone in the group who say, wait a second here, this is not honorable. And then they can start the discussion to bring the people back to where they belong. We can pray on that. We can hope on that. We'll deliver the tools. We'll deliver the principles. We'll give them the education. We'll give them the tools. but it's up to them to do what they got to do. The people have got to learn to step up and do the right thing. And if they think they're going to do the wrong thing, to do whatever it is that they want in their community, well, it's going to be cursed by God to begin with, and they're going to fail in the long run. But someone, I think, will have the common sense to correct it. And that's what we need. You know, with our administrations, the way we're setting it up, they got to self-police themselves. Well, you know, we at the National Liberty Alliance, we're not going to correct them. Unified Common Law Grand Jury is not going to correct them, per se. They won't even be around anymore once we get into the local courts. There'll be no need for a unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. This is an extraordinary action that had to be taken in order to save the nation from subversion. And so, but nevertheless, you know, we're going to teach the administrators, and they're going to take their vows. Otherwise, they won't be administrators. They will take a certain amount of education. It's a wrongdoing to put someone who doesn't understand the Constitution at all, hasn't taken some kind of a course to prepare them for it. But they'll take these courses. They'll be given the principles. They'll take the vows. And it's up to the four individuals, three to hold the other one accountable. When someone gets out of line, they got to self-police themselves. Wait a second. You took an oath to be honorable. You can't be doing that. Whatever the case may be. And the three will have the power, if they don't can't correct the other one, to throw them out. Well, committees of safety, they need to think about understanding that way. And if you give them the knowledge, someone will bring it up when things start to go, you know, awry. And we'll do the best we can, and people all over have to do the best they can. And that's about it. Anyway, we are out of time. It's midnight. We're 5 minutes over already. So with that, we're going to end our programming. Thanks, everyone, for coming. We'll be back next Monday, Lord willing. And also, don't forget Thursday. People need to get active. Let's get active. Come to the Thursday meeting. We'll try to keep it short. We try to keep it under an hour. I think we've been accomplishing that. So let's get to these meetings, and we'll take it from there. Only the people can save America. Only if you, the people, step up, can we do anything. So that's the way it's got to be. All right. Good night, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you. Good night. Name in all of the earth. Oh Lord, how excellent.
the earth.